coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Chris Jordan here, coming at you from Austin, Texas. Tonight, we are featuring a great show. The first part, we will be joined by our amazing and good friend, Mike Turber, lead investigator for 5x5 News, founder of 5x5 News. We will be talking about the 2020 UAP report. Now, quote, annual report on unidentified aerial phenomena. This is the first annual. So be ready for more of these, folks. We'll be getting into that with Mike Turber, what this means, what some of the redacted information might mean, because what we have is an officially declassified version and unclassified. So this is not the full version that's been released to the public and the media. So you can, of course, find that document, folks. Stop on by Curious Realm, CuriousRealm.com. Go to Knowledge Vault and then Declassified. So if you go to CuriousRealm.com/knowledge/declassified, the first document that you see there is the 2022 annual report. And that is the full document that's been released by the government. We'll be going over that tonight. We'll be going over some of the cases that are in there. We'll be going over the big announcement from there, which is, of course, a brand new alphabet agency that has been formed, and exactly what that means on so many levels. We will be getting into that after commercial break. Nathaniel Gillis, my man, is on, and we will be talking about the Molters and the idea that there is an ancient race of spirits, not necessarily demons, but spirits that are out there that are basically hijacking our psyche using things like alien abduction, alien encounter as a bypass of our soul's consent for them to inhabit. So a really interesting take on quite a few of the abduction phenomena cases, as well as cases of missing pregnancy that have occurred over the years. So we'll be getting into that with Nathaniel Gillis with his research after the commercial break. Of course, before we get into Mike Turber and Nathaniel Gillis both, let's make sure to stop on by the Facebook group and check out the News of the Week. News of the Week is always brought to you by the Curious Realm Facebook group. Stop on by. Join the conversation, folks. We post articles. We have conversations about their impact on humanity. Out of Popular Mechanics, scientists are reincarnating the woolly mammoth to return in 4 years. That's a pretty wild article. Out of Popular Science, a diamond holds a never-before-seen mineral that cannot exist on the surface of the Earth. Out of Jerusalem Post, alien expert, they do not come in peace. That is, of course, something that has been hypothesized for many years, is maybe we should stop blasting invites and, you know, information about our genetic code out there. Out of phys.org, new time-lapse video shows 12 years of exoplanets orbiting their star. That is an amazing video, actually. And out of The Guardian, metal detectorist unearths Tudor gold pendant linked to Henry VIII in Warwickshire. So that is just some of the news that is fit to print there, folks, coming to you out of the interwebs this week. Welcome back to the show, Mike Turber. He is lead investigator for 5x5 News. He is the gentleman who helped break the security breaches that were happening at Mandalay Bay and other places in Vegas. Mike, I can tell you right now, my recent stay at MGM and mm-hmm. Arya, both of them have instituted cards where you now must tap your card to get up or down.
Oh, so I got a new challenge, huh?
And you can Great. And you can only go to the floor that your card goes to.
Well, that's good. That's a step in the right direction. So, you know, that's so funny. The only notice that they released during the entire investigation was a notice that they had looked at the video that myself and mm-hmm. Laura Loomer had put together. That was the only notice they ever put out that during the entire investigation that they would look into that and they would try to make appropriate changes. So it's nice to see that, you know, what, 4, 5 years later. That they're,
yeah. The changes are being implemented. Good thing you were banned.
Moving at the speed of plug.
Good thing you were banned at those properties.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm banned at Wynn for life. And Wynn had nothing to do with it. But he's the one that put the challenge out there.
The scary thing is, I guarantee you, as long as it took for that security measure to go through, you could have tried to walk in 30 seconds later and every property would have known who you were. from the person selling bagels to the security chief would have known your face and who to look for.
Yeah, the head of security for Wynn Casino, when she called, she basically said that she didn't want to hear what I had to say hardly. She's just like, I just want to let you know you're banned from every Wynn facility for life. And I'm like, okay, great. Thanks. Okay. All right. Have a good day.
Your hotel smell funny
I'll
anyway.
I'll be there tomorrow.
Well, this document that came out, whenever it released, I was mm-hmm. actively on the road. But as soon as it released, I downloaded it. I added it to the website and I contacted mm-hmm. you and was like, hey, we need to do a show on this. We need to get it out there. I've seen it posted by a couple people who host podcasts, things like that. But it did not nearly receive the fanfare that the first one did.
No, you know? I think the first one, like you and I kind of briefly touched on earlier, that was hyped up quite a bit. It was, you know, a lot of people thought it was going to be something that it turned out not to be. Disclosure, you know, in disguise and all this other stuff. And that was going to be the first step towards disclosure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in my opinion, I don't know about you, if you're getting the same feeling or not, because you and I haven't discussed this part yet. But the feeling I'm getting is we're not really getting closer to disclosure. It looks like we're getting closer to something else.
We're getting closer to compartmentalization.
Yes.
To further compartmentalization. That's the only reason that you make another alphabet agency.
Yeah, exactly.
That is is called the, quote, ARO, A-A-R-O, the All Domain Anomaly mm-hmm. Resolution Office. So this this office is because a whole big issue that was happening previously with ATIP and all that stuff was ATIP was under a different program that was not under the auspice of the Department of Navy, things like that. So, you know, interdepartmentally, they didn't have to share information between the Air Force and the Navy and all that kind of stuff. And I think
technically ATIP never even existed. I mean, it was never. It never truly existed. the whole thing was just a big confusion. I can't say the words I wanted to say. One of them is cluster, and the other is some other word.
It's a clusterfuffle.
Fiddle. I just had a box of fiddle faddle too. That was pretty good. Buttery toffee. It was very.
Man, why'd you do that to me? You know my side habits. Don't be mentioning fiddle faddle in the middle of having to concentrate.
Something I just noticed on your intro was the city of the weird.
That's right.
And then I started thinking, you know, there's a lot of truth to that because it's Austin, Texas. Some I've got a lot of friends there, including you. You know, some of the attorneys that I know there and some of the others. And you have Eric Davis that's there. You've got Al Putoff. You've got the whole organization, that organization. And you got who you used to work for.
You got Alex. You got Joe Rogan.
Is there something in the water there? What's going on, man?
You got, oh, my God, his name just left my head. Adam Carolla.
Adam Carolla, yeah.
Yeah,
Adam
Carolla.
He's funny. Adam Carolla, at least he's funny.
And but back to topic here with this document and the I think it's really important and incumbent to realize, yes, the excitement that existed around the first one, and the literal buzz, because before it was created, it was, we need accountability. How did this program happen? How did these videos come out? How did this guy, I mean, never once did they ask, how did this guy release videos that weren't cleared for media release? They weren't cleared on this level where it's like, hey, we can put it out to the media. They didn't say unclassified on them. They were not unclassified in this way.
No. And,
they were departmentally declassified. Which meant they were clearly labeled. Now you can share them with that department over there and ask their opinion.
Right. And the 1910 form that was filled out, the DD 1910, that form basically gives instructions on how they are to be disseminated. And it says clearly not for public dissemination.
Yeah.
And it was basically the person who filled out that form, who shall remain nameless, because his Texas attorney might come after me. But his name rhymes with U Lozazando, something like that. The interesting part was the form not only said that it was not for public dissemination, it basically outlined what the videos entailed, what they were, and how they were to be used, which is
how
essentially
they were to be handled.
Yeah, how would it be handled? And it was under the guise of trying to categorize, which is what they're doing now, finally. So, touche. He did get that finally accomplished after the fact, that they're categorizing what these things are getting down to a streamlined way of reporting them, getting rid of the stigma of reporting them in the first place. Yeah. Remember, they had 144 on the first one, but then since then there's 247.
Total, 510 total as of right now.
another batch that was came out from that same time frame. There's 17 years of reporting going from 2004 when they started it from the Nimitz event and forward.
Yeah.
And then they added all these extra reports that came in that we're during that same time frame. So there's a lot of stigma's gone. That's a good thing. And I'm not against reporting by no means. And I know I come off as the negative Nancy on some of this stuff. But in reality, I look at the bigger picture. I look at the bigger problem here. And the bigger problem is not that these events are happening. I'm not trying to say they're not UFOs. They are aliens or they're this or that. I mean, some of these, we really don't know what they are. But the bigger problem is the fact that we have these things in our airspace and we have the equipment that should be able to identify these things. And for some reason, we can't. That's a problem. And that's always been my issue since day one.
That is part of what they actively say right down at the bottom right here is NIM Aviation's and AERO's coordination efforts will improve U.S. government awareness of objects in the airspace and resolution of UAP events.
Exactly.
And most definitely, because once again, until that first panel happened and questions were asked, and that's when we found out that there was going to be a classified panel after that, where they would hear about UFOs, UAPs, everything else. Once again, why it is now an all domain anomaly resolution office. That means, hey man, if something is like traveling underground, that falls under them too.
They covered all the bases that time. You don't have to have USO, UDO, UFO, UAP, UAR. I mean, it's just too many letters and designations. Yeah. So all
that's been the status quo up until this point, Mike, to obfuscate things, to change things. It was after Lou Elizondo came out in 2017 with this footage on CNN that we first found out that they were classified as UAPs.
Right, right.
And
that was a term that was borrowed from the British. I mean, I think that's where it originally came from.
Well, where it came from, how it came about, or how it became the major designation doesn't really matter. What matters is the fact of how many people were filing FOIA requests for UFO footage.
Mm-hmm. Only to have them rejected because it didn't say UAP.
And that they can officially say, well, sorry, we don't look into UFOs.
Right.
Sorry, we no longer investigate UFOs.
Right.
And they can say it and not be lying a lick because it's now UAPs. Sorry you don't know the lingo, but if you did, we'd at least put your stuff in queue at the bottom of the stack.
Well, hopefully it'll maintain this letter designation for a while. So, yeah, I'm sure Greenwald, the king of all FOIA requesters out there in this category, I'm sure he was probably befuddled by them doing that, and it just goes to show that that's not a good thing. I mean, we know the intent, what have you, and you're right, it's obfuscation, and that's not a good thing.
And that's just it. I think that if anything, by starting this Aero program and the Aero mm-hmm. office, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, nowhere does it say sky, nowhere does it say flying, nowhere does it say object, nowhere does it use all these keywords that put something into a box.
No, it's all domain.
It opens a whole new door, and it especially whenever you're talking, which is what we talked previously, you and I, both privately as well as on the show. Mm-hmm. The one thing that kept coming up in the hearing that happened was defense. These things are scary. Right. We don't know why they're in our airspace. Defense.
Well, you have to keep the public in fear in order to ask for money to do things.
It's the easiest way to get money to do things. It's mm-hmm. it's so much easier to say we need the money to develop an air defense system than it is to say we need money to research what the hell this is.
Right, right. That's true.
The research into what it is can be part of the air defense system because we need to know what to defend against. However, we need money now, and the easiest way to do that is through military means. Hands right. down, through Congress, everything else, military moves money, period.
And you have to wonder if at some point down the way, are we going to get some concise booklet that's going to come out like the Project Blue Book with the past 10, 15 years or whatever of all these reported sightings and whatnot, telling what they are. Now, keep in mind, this is all limited to mostly this doesn't include civilian sightings. So this is all military or, nuclear or, something around our nuclear facilities and things of that nature.
Yeah.
So it's going to involve several departments, but it's all governmental type reporting. So if it's limited to that, and we have 510 now to basically take a look at and that number's higher, obviously, as we speak, so you have to wonder, are we going to get a concise report sometime down the road that's going to say that, 2,714 of these events were recorded, and of that, we've got another 700 that we can't figure out what they are, basically the same number that Blue Book had.
Yeah.
You have to concern yourself for this down the way. Is it just another, essentially another big nothing burger for everybody to sit there, and at the end, the government gives us this final report, and we're supposed to believe, everything that they tell us.
Well, why are we giving you money if we're not getting a report?
Yeah, exactly.
At the minimum, give us a public accounting, which is basically what this report is. No different than the NDAA. So we're going to tell you, we can't tell you what all the black budget money is. However, we have to tell you that there's a black budget and how much money is going into it.
Right.
We can't tell you how it's going to be divvied beyond that point.
Right.
But we got to show an accounting for the money and where it goes.
Yeah. The Senate Appropriations Committees and all of the different levels of government that have their fingers in the pie, so to speak. Yeah.
At the least,
they have to account for it.
At the least, they have to let you know that they are spending money on an office of anti-propaganda. Literally.
I'm very well fed.
That one still cracks me up. Like, why the extra letters, dude? Why not just call it the propaganda office? Yeah. It's the propaganda office. It's anti-propaganda propaganda. Pretty sure that's still propaganda.
It's called the APP arrow, the app arrow.
It's like, what? Yeah, we funded that. Look it up, people. Dead serious. It's horrifying. But that's just it. People don't realize that things like that are out there. Things like that are in place.
Well, the interesting thing is that there is a need for something in this arena. That definitely needs to be there. Is that way we can categorize whether or not we're being infiltrated by, you know, UAPs or, you know, rather than call them UAPs, just from drones from other countries, from China, from Russia, you know, from wherever. Doesn't matter where they're coming. Even from ourselves.
They need to be accountable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if they're ours, we need to be accountable for it.
But they need to be identified right away. I mean, this is something that, you know, when I see these things and you see these reports where they have the opportunity to go after these things.
Yep.
And they don't. And look at the three videos that we got from the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
All three videos had an object that they could have chased down, and they didn't. So at the time that these videos were taken, that everybody's familiar with the three videos I'm referring to, you know, Tic Tac, you know.
Go Fast, Gimbal.
Go Fast and Gimbal. So you've got all three of these videos of objects that we didn't chase down to find out what it was. If it was so darn important and they were so freaked out by these things, they should have chased them down. Why didn't they chase them down?
Yeah.
Well, that opens up a whole subject for a whole nother show that we won't get into now.
Well, but, it's what we've gotten into previously, and I'll get into it right now. I got no problem with it. It is a known freaking quantitative that we are testing against a known quantitative. It is A-B technology. We are red team, blue teaming stuff against our own known quantitative before it goes out into a battlefield.
There you go.
No different than the fact of, great, we created the stealth bomber. Do you think that we let it out in the wild without being able to track it?
True, very true.
Problem with radar, with it coming in for a landing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you think it comes in for a landing if the tower can't see it?
Yeah, and the bigger picture is you know, each time we're testing new technology, we got, you know, brand new phased array radar, Spy-1B, you know, even Kevin Day didn't know that his radar was upgraded. A lot of people don't realize that, but Kevin Day didn't have the security clearance to even know that his radar had been upgraded. And love Kevin Day to death. Of all the people that, you know, have been reporting this stuff out, I think his testimony is probably the most important of all of them.
Yeah.
Because he identified several key things that led me down the path to determine what I believe, you know, the Nimitz event to be. And, you know, as you look at these objects and you look at what's made this whole thing popular is obviously the three Navy videos. The questions that come to mind are the ones I brought up earlier, is, you know, one of which is, okay, why didn't we figure out what they were when they were right there? Why is the video only a minute and some odd seconds long on each of the videos? We don't have a beginning. We don't have an end. There's more questions than there are answers. And the questions bring up a lot more questions that make people wonder, what are we doing? Why was this video separated from the rest of the video? Why is this all we're seeing? There's got to be more to this, and there is. And then you have to wonder, is there a bigger picture? Is there like you're saying, the Office of Propaganda that's utilizing some of this information and saying, you know what? They put that information out there. Let's let it go. Let's let it ride.
Yeah.
That's why Lou Elizondo still has a security clearance.
Absolutely. It's either that or the fact of he was doing his job the way he was instructed to disseminate information to begin with. One of the two.
Or possibly he didn't even know he was being used.
Yes. Third option. But still the same thing, using him to disseminate the information in the way that they want it and need it disseminated.
Yeah, exactly.
Without his explicit permission, without his implicit knowledge.
And no one wants to be that person that's been used, and no one wants to feel like they were the puppet in this big master puppetry show. And, you know, you hear Master of Puppets playing in the background and Metallica just stringing
the strings.
God,
I wish I could cue it up. I can't. I don't want the muted content.
No, you get a strike or something on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it does make you wonder. There's a bigger picture here.
Yeah.
I'm just some low guy on the totem pole. I don't amount to anything. I don't even have a clearance anymore. Well, I don't have any of this stuff. I'm not even in the mix anymore. It doesn't seem like sometimes, but for some reason, I keep getting information that's either given to me or I get myself into a situation where I find it. And if I'm able to find this stuff, then what's going on?
Yeah.
You know, am I being played? Is someone telling someone to contact me and say, hey, Mike, you know, here's some information, blah, blah, blah. And it may or may not be classified. They don't know. I don't know. You know, you don't know until you actually spill the beans. You know, but then when you look at a report that you know, you're looking at it and you're like, oh, number 17. This is interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Why is someone, number 17. Okay, that makes a lot more sense now. And that'll come out one day. Somebody will say, oh, that's the number 17 Mike was talking about. And as you sit back and you try to relax and you try to put all the pieces of paper, whether you stick them to the wall or you have them on your computer, or just lay them across the desk, and you start throwing darts at them or whatever, or arrows at them. We'll call them arrows now. You have to sit back and sit in awe and go, wow, this is a very well coordinated piece of non-coordinated information. Because I think a lot of this just fell into place. I don't think all of it was coordinated. I think some of it just happened. And then people said, you know what? Let them run with it.
Yeah. And no, I mean, right here is the prime example. I've got it up on screen right now. Arrow was established as the UAP Task Force successor entity on 20 July 2022. Per its mandate, Arrow has the authority to coordinate UAP efforts beyond DOD and is authorized to develop processes and procedures to synchronize and standardize collection, reporting, and analysis throughout not just DOD, but the IC as well, with the support and coordination of NIM Aviation. Arrow will coordinate with other non-IC agencies such as FAA, NASA, and NOAA. And once again, you were mentioning the balloons. You want to know why NOAA?
Yeah, there's a bunch of balloons.
People forget the fact that we have been using high-speed balloon technology for 20, 30 years.
Oddly enough, is
triangle-shaped because of the wind shear that it can withstand in that shape at high altitude.
And plus the number of balloons that we launch each day. Each weather station that has a balloon launching facility is automated now. They don't even have to have a person there.
Yeah.
Each balloon station launches two balloons per day, every 12 o'clock Zulu each day. So it's different times around the world as far as the time is concerned, but they're launched at the exact same time, synchronized around the world. 1900 to over 2,000 balloons are launched at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't see a flood of these balloons in the sky, but of course, now that our radar is getting better and phased array radar can actually pick it up. And this has been verified by Edward Teets. He's the weather coordinator at Edwards Air Force Base, no play on his name. But when I was talking to him, when I received the information on the weather balloons that I believe were involved in the Nimitz event, and he kind of agreed. He said, well, now that the new phased array radar that they have, they can now see these balloons where they couldn't see them before.
Mm-hmm.
That very well could be what we were talking about.
Sure.
And here we have it. So.
Well, and, you know, once again, the fact that they have standardized these processes, number one, until the congressional hearing. Any pilot, civilian or military, was bound to be stripped of wings if they went and reported something.
Yeah.
At the very least, you'd be taking a piss test. pardon my, modern nomenclature there. instead of urinalysis. But at the very least, you'd be going and taking a urinalysis or a breathalyzer or something first. And then after that, sure, here's kind of a form. Let us know what you saw, and we'll get back to you before your next shift, air quotes. you know, that's probably how it would have worked. And it was a big point of shame. Not that tons of them didn't see things or see something or, hey, what the heck was that? Not that they saw something beaming up cattle, what have you, or coming through or entering a portal. But they've definitely seen something that they would, by all instrumentation and their realm of observation in that world up there, would be like, okay, that was weird. And most wouldn't report it because of that.
Right.
Now that we've, I think, stripped some of that shame from it and are actively looking into it, to have the solidified process across all agencies is hugely important, because otherwise, if you've got Form 122A and Form 222/C in two different departments of the military, hey, could be the fact that that person's doing a cross joint project, you know, mm-hmm. and would have to fill out both forms. And now the two different programs have different information.
Yeah, I'm happy the whole program is moving forward. I'm very much in agreement that it needs to. The stigma of reporting these things has to go away.
Yeah.
I saw a UFO for the first time in probably 10 years last week on Tuesday, and I'll upload that video. I did get video of it, and I will upload that shortly. And to this day, I don't know what it was, and I hate to say it. I don't know what it was, but I really don't. I was in the middle of a conversation with someone on the phone, and I looked up, and I just pulled into the hotel, and I was saw these three lights in the sky, and I said, "Wow!" Just thinking of a plane coming in, because I'm on a flight path, but it was a little bit low. And then when the positions of the lights changed and started spinning around each other, I was like, "Wait a second." And I hung up on the guy's name's Charlie. I said, "Charlie, I got to go." And he's still talking. I said, "Charlie, I really got to go." So I hung up the phone and then just turned the video on and just started capturing it. And I'll send it to you so you can take a look at it. And then we'll put it up. Maybe we can discuss it sometime. But, I sat there and started to think, man, I mean, I know the feeling that someone would have of putting this out, because I was going to send it to, you know, various places. And I started thinking, do I really want to get myself into this? Here's a guy that's a known, you know, has done a hoax before, as part of a documentary thing or whatever, but now he's going to produce a video of one. And I started thinking, man, no, I can't do this, because it's just going to come against me. But I'm going to put it out there anyway, because I don't know what it was. I really don't.
Yeah.
So the thought process that one goes through when they see this, whether they're seeing it on instruments, they're seeing it with their eyes or what have you, you know, there's a moment that you have to make a decision. Do you report this or not? And before, there was no mechanism available for them to do this.
Yeah.
There's no true streamlined way of doing it. And now that the stigma's gone, that the number of reports are going to get higher and higher and higher, which is a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. It's just going to produce a lot of numbers for things, you know, for this, you know, new office to look at, the Aero office to look at, which is good for them. But at the same time, it produces a whole new set of questions that if these things are happening so often and we can't readily identify these things on the spot with all the instrumentation that we have, with all the sensors that we have, with all the millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment that we've purchased, you know, just think about this. Some of the pictures that we get that we've seen are from people's iPhones inside of a multi-million dollar aircraft.
Yeah. Aren't you the RIO? Aren't you the RIO, man? Shouldn't you be watching some instrumentation or... taking some readings or something other than like, ooh, check that out. Go Instagram.
Yeah, so you got your wizzo pulling out his iPhone, taking a picture of something as he zooms by.
Yeah, hashtag
and you're wondering,
Insta
wait,
famous.
Don't we have a system on board that should track that for us and should automatically start and aim a camera and take pictures away?
Yeah, well, there's a reason why I can do it.
But I can whip out my iPhone and take a picture of it, but I sure as hell can't train these million-dollar optics that we have on board on it.
Yeah, precisely. Now, and, when you look at the numbers they're put out in this report, these 366 additional reports when combined with the 144 reports identified in the preliminary assessment.
510.
Bring it to 510. So 366 additional reports since the reporting was opened. When the first congressional hearing happened, they had 144 cases that they were like, we aren't sure.
Right. Now, keep in mind, out of the 144, they had one that they had solved at that time. Yep. I do have information that's new. I don't know if it's out there or not, but between 7 and 13 of the original 144 have been recategorized into a category that I can't say what the category is, but we'll just say that the 7 to 13 of those have been categorized in such a way that they believe they know what they are.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of those are balloons.
Yeah.
I'll let you know that.
And they go on to say, like, Arrow's initial analysis and characterization of the 366 newly identified reports informed by a multi-agency process judge more than half is exhibiting unremarkable characteristics. 26 characterized as unmanned aircraft or UAS-like systems, and 163 characterized as balloon or balloon-like entities.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 attributed to clutter, which would be debris flying in the air, small, tiny birds in a group, things
like
that.
Well, clutter is also just so you know, clutter is could be temperature inversion.
Sure.
Could be quite a few things, like on a radar screen.
Yeah.
There's actually a button that you push to declutter the screen. Because so if the screen has a lot of erroneous activity on it, imagine you've seen weather radar before, I'm sure, where it has all this stuff on there, and they say, oh, it's a temperature inversion. Well, they can click a button too and get rid of the temperature inversion just so you can see what's actually rain and what's not actually rain, especially if they have Doppler radar. Yeah. But before that, as the radar improves, all of these things should go away. So when you declutter your screen, I think in one of the videos, actually, you can hear them say that they're about to declutter.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one it is. I think it's GoFast or Gimbal or one of the two.
Yeah, that they were decluttering to verify something was there.
Yeah.
Granted, it goes on to say initial characterization does not mean positively resolved or unidentified. This initial characterization better enables Arrow and ODNI, the Office of Defense and National Intelligence, to efficiently and effectively leverage resources against the remaining 171 uncharacterized and unattributed UAP reports, and they require further analysis. So,
we have Odie and I, somebody that works there is actually listening to this podcast tonight. I've talked to him earlier today.
Welcome.
There's scenarios that once played out. As you and I sit here as civilians and we're looking into this and we're trying to read into it further than say the average person who looked at it would read into it. And of course people wonder where you get the other information from or whatever. And some of it's just done from knowledge of what have you. Some of it is not necessarily leaked to us, but some of it is inferred, or when you ask a question, you kind of know what the answer is or what have you. But as this information comes out to the public is kind of, you've got two different types of public. You've got the public that wants it to be something, and then you have the type of the public who wants an actual answer. We're biased. We're all biased one way or another. I'm biased, you're biased. No matter who says what, we're all biased to some degree.
Yeah.
But the level of bias that you get in some areas gets to be a little bit cumbersome, where actually it clouds judgment.
Yep.
What I don't want to have happen is that the people who have those clouded judgments be put into a position where they actually control some of this information. The information should be looked at from a scientific principle, and scientific method should be applied to each and every case that these 510 cases that we have now, that's the method that should be applied to each case, so that when we get an answer, when they're done, we can sit back and go, yeah, I guess it was that, or it's this, or it's that, or hopefully, because I'm a believer, and a lot of people think I'm a negative Nancy, but yeah. I hope that it comes out that we do actually somehow make contact, or we identify something and say, you know what? This has been identified as extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
Well, and that is the day I want.
Oh, absolutely. I want nothing less as well. What that is going to take is, once again, a standardization of investigation. I mean, that's something that MUFON has been putting on the table for decades. And say what you want. Like, I'm a lifetime benefactor to MUFON. I believe in what they're doing. Say what you want about them, folks. They are one of the only people out there investigating in the field that have gone through the efforts to make a standardized reporting process, period. Yep. Period.
I agree 100%. And
government entities haven't, alphabet agencies haven't, Men in Black haven't, Area 51 agents haven't. Nobody from Dulce Base has, but MUFON has, which is one reason why when it came time for the big show, so to speak, with the congressional hearing, a lot of the questions that were posed when it came to evidentiary things came from MUFON and were posed by MUFON, because out of everybody, they've got the greatest volume of data regarding witness sightings, things like that.
Yeah. The scary thing for me is when I don't mind hearing MUFON being mentioned in the halls of Congress, but when I hear Jeremy Corbell's name bounced around, it kind of freaks me out a little bit.
Why is that, Mike? Why is that?
Well, I think the part of the reason is the overhyping of some of the videos that he's produced that have clearly been identified by myself, by Mick West, and by many, many others as to what these actually were. And that you never hear him come back and say, hey, this video that we put out that we said was this and was done by this Snoopy team or done by this or that or whatever.
Never a retraction.
We never get a retraction. I mean, you retract things. I retract things. If I screw up, absolutely, I'll come back and go, you know what? Yep, I screwed up, and it's not what I thought it was. We don't hear that.
Hey, you know, like you were saying, you're a believer. I am a believer's believer, man. But I'll be straight. I break hearts and paradigms on Facebook threads all day long. I mean, there was one today where somebody had footage of their garage, and you know, I guess this is just dust zipping around like that. It's like, well, man, the way it's moving, you know, yeah, dust can move pretty fast in the air, especially with the breeze passing by. That's a garage. That's just a big suction chamber waiting to happen.
And keep in mind too, the video I did with even the Las Vegas shooting, when I thought it was a helicopter, even Tucker Carlson. I told him when I was talking to him on the phone, I was like, well, I believe at the moment, I believe that to be dust or whatever that's brought up by a helicopter above. Come find out it wasn't a helicopter. It literally was just dust and pollen that was in the air.
Yeah.
And it looks just like some of the videos you and I have seen in the last week or so where there's just been a several videos that have come out where they're either bugs or pollen and stuff like this. And you know, sometimes you just got to sit back and, you know what, let's relax a little bit. Let's you know, if someone thinks it's whatever it is, that's fine. But the problem is that when you want to offer some sort of explanation to something, if the explanation doesn't fit whatever the agenda or the, whatever it is that they're wanting it to be, you're immediately dismissed. And it kind of makes you where you don't even want to do this anymore. You're just like, you know what? And everybody wants it to be this, or they want it to be that. And I come out and I say it's this, and then bam, I'm the bad guy. It's just like Mick West; he's pounced on all the time. because he's the king of the debunkers, right? So he gets his fair share of bad news, you know, or bad reporting to somebody telling him that, hey, what you're saying is wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong. And you're a video game guy, and you know, how would you know any different? And it's like, it doesn't matter who you are or what your background. That very background, brings things forward. And there's a lot of people that are experts in one field, and they become experts in a whole other different field just by surely looking at the stuff long enough. I've been looking at video forensics and different types of photography and video analysis for over 30 years.
Well,
and when people.
That's just it. You know, when people are like, oh, what makes you an expert? I'm like, probably 30 years of videography and video editing and, you know, living my life behind a lens.
Yeah.
Makes me understand how a lens operates and the aberrations that can happen. And, you know.
And we know what bokeh is. And, you know, and Jeremy Corbell didn't even know what that word was, I think, when it first came out. And these are the things that people should allow. There's a place for the debunkers. They're not going to get nearly the screen time. And you're going to, a Jeremy Corbell video will get 10 million views before a Mick West explanation video will get 5,000 views. It's just that simple. Because that's just the way it works. But you'll never hear Jeremy Corbell come out. And I'm not trying to pounce on Jeremy Corbell, but obviously I am, I guess, but in a roundabout way, I'm not, or whatever, he can sue me. So the problem is you don't hear someone come back and say, you know, after further analysis and after listening and watching the explanation by Mick West or Mike Turber or Joe Blow from Idaho or whoever, we have determined that this was actually bokeh. No, you don't get that. Yeah. You know, and that to me means you have zero scientific credibility. You're not using that method, and I really don't have a lot of respect for that.
While we've been chatting here, I haven't posted it yet. I posted a video a couple weeks ago because, as you know, you were actively, and I want to thank you on air here. You were the one that inspired me to start doing astrophotography, shooting planets and stars and things like that. I was already shooting the moon, and you were like, hey, you know, you'd be surprised. Like, you got some good lenses. You should just point your camera up. You'd be surprised what you get. And you sent me some settings, and I've been obsessed since. My 8-inch arrives tomorrow. So,
oh, sweet.
I went Celestron 8-inch with the tracking base and all that. So, yeah.
Good, perfect. Hopefully
I'll get some clear skies for the comet. But one of the things that I've done is starting taking videos of the anomalies that I see that I can explain. And I'm about to play a video. I'll narrate it for you because you're on the phone as always. But this is a rainbow orb that is vibrating in different colors and looks very alive and moving, hollow in the middle, big black void with a sharp ring around it, that has fuzz like radiating off around it. It almost looks like a living cell. And as much as I hate to tell everybody, what you are looking at, that big black circle in the middle, is the black center of my lens on the front of my telescope. If you look at the front of a like Cassegrain telescope, a refracting telescope, you'll see a little black spot in front of the mirror. That is what is making that big black spot. What you are looking at is the star Sirius, one of the brightest stars in the night sky, the brightest star in the night sky, and very colorful, beautiful colors in Sirius, especially whenever you start looking at it. And it's one of them that frequently will shift color. So what you're looking at right here is literally the iris of the camera trying to keep up and focus on this mm-hmm. object that is very bright and out of focus.
Yeah, I can't see that. I'm not looking at what you're showing because I'm on the phone.
I know, but I know that you will be viewing the Facebook video and stuff later, course. which is why I wanted to play it. And I once again haven't posted this in groups, but I've been posting them on the Curious Realm page and then sharing them out to like MUFON groups and things like that, where it's like, so you think you caught something in the distance, you know, that shifting color and everything else. No, man, mm-hmm. that is the flash rate of your camera trying to focus on something that's out of focus and bright.
The layers of the atmosphere that the light is coming through. It's also what's called chromatic aberration, which the actual word is color ghost or mm-hmm. chromatic aberration. So you have all of these things at play at the same time.
Temperature invariance.
Yep. And what's funny is when you see somebody with a P900 or a P1000, they're outside and they over zoom onto a star and they see all this trickling, this bouncing light effect or whatever. And they, you know, they say the star's alive or they, you know, all whatever they come up with. I mean, it's really neat looking. It's like when you go underwater, you know, you have to remember that when you have your camera in your car's at say 68 degrees and you get out and it's either, you know, the temperature is either higher or lower normally, which is what's going to be outside. You have this haze effect that happens that forces the camera to where it can't focus properly. Yeah. Plus you're trying to focus on an object that's light years away and it's not going to focus properly. And then when you see this for the first time, it does look really freaky. It
looks wild, man. Like it literally looks like the video of a cell in a drop of water.
When you look at your cigarette and you go, what kind of cigarette is this?
What it reminds me of a lot. And I'll share a link to this video with you, Mike. From my OneDrive, that way you can see it. And quite literally, what it truly reminds me of is the videos from NASA from the tether experiment, the mm-hmm. famous videos where it's like, oh, look at this mile long tether with all of these things floating around it.
That was STS 48, I think it was.
And you know, don't get me wrong, wild, incredible video. It's always been insane to me, but the behavior of this and the way that it flashes and the way that it moves is mm-hmm. what reminds me of that. If you were talking about some flex of even material off of that, reflective material, anything like that that would be fluttering in the background, like it would create the same kind of effect with being out of focus as opposed to the object, the tether, being in focus.
Right, exactly. And you know, a lot of those objects that they were witnessing, you know, coming off of that, they were just coming out of the nozzles from the RCS, you know, the pointing ohms burns that they had, and all these different things you see floating in space. You know, keep in mind too, when there's going to be a Falcon launch here at 3:02 this morning or tomorrow morning. I'm going to go watch that. Each time there's a launch, you've got several objects that fall off, whether it be ice or whether it just be, you know, pieces when they separate. There's UAP reports left and right. It's like, oh, look at that object's following the Falcon 9 as it
just happened the other night. From Maui, where they recorded, you know, the strange spiral in the sky. And like for a week, I've been seeing the headline, strange spiral in the sky. It's like, dude, everybody knows now that is a falling booster.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty common knowledge at this point.
But that doesn't get the headlines, man. That doesn't draw in all the people.
Utterly revealed within 24 hours, but 3-4 days later, people are still pushing the headline of strange spiral filmed over Maui. It's like,
I remember the one where the Russian, the Russian had a launch off of Sweden.
Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. And that one was absolutely amazing to see. And, of course, we had a launch, the Falcon Heavy launch here a few weeks back mm-hmm. before I can't remember the date it was, but it was right near sunset. And, of course, anytime you have something during sunset or sunrise, you're going to have some rather unique looking events occur in the atmosphere, and they will remain in the atmosphere for hours, and it looks really cool. So as that, you know, as that gets reported back, and the big one was the one over California when they did the launch from Vandenberg, and SpaceX had that launch, and the it was looking in here, and right during the same time, that was the most reported UFO event in California history. And it was nothing more than a launch. So sometimes it takes a little bit of education over time, and sometimes it just you sit back and for days and days and days, just like you were saying a few moments ago, that they were reporting it as
the number of times that I have seen. I'm showing the Sirius video again right now. I've just shared it with you. Feel free to break it down on a 5x5 video if you want. I just sent you the link to that personally in a text. And, you know, it's one of those that, Mike, I belong to a lot of social media groups, as you know.
You do.
And if I posted that blind in one of those groups and just said, recorded in my recorded from my backyard in Austin, Texas, with the date, I would probably get a good 30 replies within minutes of, I saw something like that.
Yeah.
I saw that. I've seen that.
I'm hoping that when I post my video of the UFO I saw last week, because someone else had to see this. I literally waited a day or two and hoped that someone had reported it, because this thing was huge. I mean, it wasn't small by any means, and many people had to see it, especially with me running through the parking lot with my camera aiming up at the sky and the cars going by. I had two cars stop. Man, it was bizarre. You know, had me befuddled, and I'm sitting there going, okay, what could it be? It had to be maybe some lights hanging off of a balloon from a party or something, because the way they move is just not physically possible. There's no airplane that could have done this. I mean, that's ruled out. Was not a plane. Was not, you know, only thing that could do that would be a balloon and something hanging below it that I can think of. But it's pretty bizarre. I'll post the link back to you. You'll have to edit out the part where I'm cussing a little bit, but
yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, you've got to be willing to accept the explanation of the mundane, you know.
You got to go the prosaic way first.
And believe me, I have seen video upon video upon video like this for years mm-hmm. and years, and until it happened in front of my eyes, not once, but twice, but numerous times.
Right.
I was like, I'm going to start recording this.
Yeah. So now you're going to start recording.
When I saw it the first time was when I was like, oh, my God. Like, the number of times I've seen videos like this and people posting them going, look at what I caught. And you're like, wow, that's a head scratcher. That's a noodle scratcher.
The big turkey, the one that was seen in Turkey, the UFO event that they say that you could see, like, the aliens moving across the deck or something like this. Yeah. And so that was one of the most famous videos ever. It literally is a cruise ship off in the distance. But the amount of press that has got you, there's no way you and I could sit there until the end of time and tell people that's a cruise ship. And we would just receive hate mail after hate mail after hate mail.
Oh, sure.
But I was down in Fort Lauderdale back when we did the release of the documentary, and we were out on the water, and they have a theater out there. Believe it or not, there's a theater that's on the water where you actually take your boat to. Like, you take a drive-in theater, you take your car to. You take your boat to. And so we were there. We were watching some films, and the Chinese lady who actually won the film festival was sitting right next to me, and I spoke enough Chinese to where she thought I was the coolest person on the boat. She pointed off into the distance, and I told her, oh, that's a cruise ship. And as I was looking at it, I was like going, wow, that is so amazingly, so much like the turkey event. I started filming it, and everybody's wondering what I'm filming. And as I'm filming it, people are looking, oh, it's a UFO. He's filming a UFO. I'm like, no, it's just a cruise ship, I swear.
Yeah, and if you get right angle, everything else, the bottom of that ship will utterly disappear against the waterline.
Yeah.
Especially if you're at the right distance and it's the right time of day, there will be a temperature inversion layer there, and it will look like it's just hovering.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. And I never... never even posted. I should have posted that video, but I didn't for fear of someone saying, oh, he's doing another hoax or something.
Well, you know, and once again, I would love to start just posting these blind and see how people react and then come back and be like, here's what it really is. Just so you know, I think that's a little trolly in this day and age. So typically I post it with the caveat of what you're looking at is this. I could have posted this in 98 different ways. So consider that when you're looking at a blind post that gives you nothing about directionality, time of day,
location. And that's what most of these are. And you keep in mind, third phase of whatever the hell they are. Third phase of moon, you know, they got caught red-handed, you know, with, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the story, but here recently they were caught red-handed, you know, faking a video. You know, the aliens are not coming to our planet so that they can get five different, you know, videos to post each day. It's just, that's probably not happening. I'm not saying all their videos are fake or, you know, whatever. I'm sure user submitted videos and what have you are what they are. Well, and some people just don't know what they have. They film something. They don't know what it is. They don't have the technical expertise to be able to go into it. But what happens is, and here's a key indicator, when they don't list the date, the time, and the exact location of where these videos are done, that's pretty much a key indicator that no one did their homework on this one before they released it. They just released it and, you know, let it run. So submit some of those to Third Phase of Moon and see how many get on it.
Well, and you know, even the fact of in a lot of these groups and a lot of these communities, you'll hear some folks that are like, I record this 3-4 times a week at my house.
Right.
It's like, then that is not an anomaly. That's a known quantity at that point. Like you may
not an anomaly.
Like how often does the train go by? So often you won't even notice. You know, like
that's true.
And it's one of those, like, if it's happening that frequently, take that into consideration.
If you've lived on your property
and you saw this one or two off event that was phenomenal and amazing, awesome, and you have video, awesome. If you're posting three videos a week, I'd choose to believe that you live in an odd flight line pattern or something like that. You know, where maybe the airport that you're looking at off in the distance isn't a major airport, but it's like a corporate airport. Something like that.
I love the ones where the paratroopers are jumping out and they have the flares off their legs and stuff. Yeah. And then every single time it looks the same. And every time people go, oh, look at this. This can't be this. And then people are saying what it can't be. You know, this is not a military flare. This is not a this. It's not paratroopers. And they're just arbitrarily saying what it's not when they're actually stating what it really is.
Yeah.
They're paratroopers. The lights are going.
Well, we have to be willing to dismiss. Absolutely. But the main thing is, just to loop it back to the conversation here, it's the fact of having a maintained system and a groomed system and sieve through which you put evidence. Until Arrow, until this document and this agency, the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, until the creation of that, we had zero unified documentary process.
And zero. I hope it trickles down into a civilian type system as well.
They're cooperating with civilian. They have oversight over civilian whenever it comes time for cooperation.
Yeah, I saw the FAA is involved with it. What
FAA,
have you.
NASA?
Yeah. And that means Bigelow's involved if FAA is involved. Because that phone number, when you call the UFO hotline for the FAA, it rings to Bigelow.
You have reached Bigelow Research.
Bigelow Aerospace. So you've reached
the operator, press 1.
Oh man, you know, the thing is that I know we tend to make light of some of this, but there is a very serious end of it, whereas, you know, I think you alluded to earlier where aliens coming here may not be friendly.
We may not want to be beaming out our genetic code and exactly where we live.
But even then, we're defenseless anyway. If someone comes here and they're X number, 50 years ahead of us, 100 years, most likely they're 10,000 to a million years ahead of us.
Yeah.
We don't have a chance anyway.
Yeah.
If it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
It's exactly what Stephen Hawking said.
It's just like, the end of time.
Well, and the thing is, the problem that we have spoken with numerous people in the UAP UFO abduction, investigative field about, Mike, is the fact of we tend to anthropomorphize this situation.
We tend to
think of things as the intergalactic union. And the fact that we would have an intergalactic federation if we unified humanity. So if these people got to the point of traveling amongst the stars, they would surely be the most civilized of people and have peace at their hearts. Ask the people who saw Genghis Khan coming over the hill how they felt about him.
They wouldn't be asking anybody. Well, they were gone.
Really, just think about the fact. The one thing that I have been positing over the last year with this show is consider traveling somewhere that you're following a signal, and the only frame of reference you have is the media you're receiving.
Yeah.
You have never met a person from there. The only frame of reference that these beings would have on humanity is the transmissions that we have sent out, like Steve Urkel, CNN, and movies about alien invasions and what we do to them.
Yeah. And the very first signal that we sent out that actually would have made it through space was Hitler. I mean, come on, man. We're talking about the Berlin, the Olympics and stuff, the opening ceremonies to that. That would be our first. But even so, that spear is only going to be how many years has it been? 80 years or so of time that's gone. So it's 80 light years out, which would include, say, 80 light years from where we are now, would probably be about 70 or 80 stars.
Regardless of their intention, you would have to expect that anybody that would see the evolution of mankind through just that one facet of the crystal would be like, wow, these are some whack folks, man.
Yeah, they saw Three's Company, they saw MASH, they saw, all these different TV shows. They're like, wow,
they've seen the footage of every war. They see our capabilities. They see,
a long way to go.
Every bit of intelligence that you want to give or keep away from somebody, we have transmitted out there. Even our intelligence.
But we're gonna be coming to them. So I think it'd be like a preemptive strike for them. It'd be like, we don't want those idiots coming here.
Do you think an intergalactic civilization wouldn't be able to crack our encryption? No offense. Do you think that they weren't listening to that communique that you sent yesterday? Yeah.
I just hope that they went through the same process as they were coming up through their technological advances and go, remember back we had a TV show that was like Three's Company.
Oh, my God. These people have a horrible comedy, too.
I don't know what made me think of Three's Company.
What was it? Flight of the Navigator. Was it Flight of the Navigator where that's the case? Whenever they show up, they're speaking in commercials and all that kind of stuff.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious.
Once again, I think the important thing to maintain when considering the fact that we are looking at the official unclassified first annual UFO UAP accountability document here. The thing to remember is that at least a conversation in such things has been open.
Yeah. And you have to have the takeaway. And the takeaway from this is as follows. We are now looking at a situation. We are now looking at events that originally when we looked at them, we poo-pooed the person who told it. We gave them some sort of stigma to make them where they didn't want to report it. All of these different things are now gone, or hopefully gone, and that they should report it. And even though we've made light of some of the situations this evening, it's not to make light of the entire scenario. And the bigger question, the questions that I always have is the ones that remain. Why is it that we can't figure these things out faster, that we have to spend millions of dollars to produce a new organization to come out and actually categorize these things when we should have already had that in place to begin with? If we can't identify the things that are in our skies now, and we have to produce a whole nother organization, and spend millions of more dollars to produce these reports and stuff to figure out what it is that we can't figure out what they were in the first place, then what are we spending our money on? Yeah. Where's the money going?
Yeah.
That's my problem. Well, and I think it should be everybody's problem. This should already have been done.
That is exactly what the problem of the members of Congress were when they called the panel and called for the first document to be drafted. When you consider
that meeting that they had later in the day, meeting after the original UAP task force meeting, and then they had the classified version later that day, there were some arguments during that latter session that were just what I just said. They said, one of the questions was brought up as to why isn't our existing surveillance systems being able to categorize these objects and determine what they are? Why are we told that we can track golf balls over, at the distance of the moon, yet we can't figure out what these UAPs are? They're hundreds of feet above our ship.
Golf ball from space.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally.
And almost verbatim what was said by one of the, I won't say the name, but one of the congressmen, was that if we are able to track an object the size of a golf ball at or near the distance of the moon, why is it that we can't figure out what these objects are several hundred feet above one of our ships? Can you answer that for me?
Yeah.
And the answer was
no, not
at this time.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Once again, when dealing with anomaly things like that, there are a lot of cases that we aren't sure of. There's a lot of them that we are. There's a lot of them. I mean, once again, 361. They found another 119 and 247 new ones came in. So over the last year since the founding of that office, one report a day rang enough. And that's not saying that that's all that came in.
Well,
those are the ones worthy of investigation.
Yeah, they need to bring in some people.
They couldn't just immediately, poof, gone. These are the ones that they need to look into that are more than likely nothing, but we still need to look at them.
Yeah, and they still need to keep them on the books.
The equivalent of one a day. So when you're talking, I mean, imagine if you had one incursion a day over your airspace like that.
You got a problem.
You got a problem.
I agree, sir. I'm glad you see it that way. And I hope that some of the listeners, they see it for what it is. There is a problem, and they're trying to put a solution together, but.
Well, and once again, I am not one for the military solution myself. However, that is where the money will first be spent. Just like with the Skunk Works video, sure, free power for all. Right after we put it into weapons and test it and make sure it works right in weaponry.
Yeah.
Once it's battlefield tested, we'll make it publicly available. Absolutely. More money for us. So
we finally have fusion coming. So
once again, as we've said in numerous episodes leading up to this one, Mike, I firmly believe that this is a slow and steady process of disinformation that we are seeing, and that the whole reason behind it is to regularize the technology, like the laser system. The laser chaff system that can project a infrared hologram.
And NASA make it talk and all that. Yep.
Yeah. The F-16 nuclear platform that will allow an F-16 to be powered, or similar platform to be powered, by nuclear capability. all of this stuff that, yes, like, we've got to say it exists. We've got to say it's there, because we aren't going to be able to bring it out in generation 38.
That's right. And it all costs money. And that money, the only way they can get the money is keeping us in a state of fear. And FEAR is an acronym. It stands for false evidence appearing real.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So,
well, let's see what happens with that.
Absolutely. Mike, I want to thank you for your time as always, man, and just kind of cracking these nuts open and getting to the meat of them. Let everybody know where they can keep up with the work of 5x5 News, where they can go watch your videos, all that good stuff, my friend.
Yeah, probably the best place to go would be on the YouTube. Just search for 5x5 News. It's the channel is, I believe it's youtube.com/5x5 News USA or US or something like that. Mm-hmm. But just search for 5x5 News. You'll see it.
Yeah.
And the 5x5 logo, and then you'll know you're in the right place. That'll be your number one spot. And more stuff is being worked on as we speak. I'm still wrapping up some stuff here with Afghanistan. I'm going to start revealing some more of that here probably within the next couple of weeks about what's really going on over there.
Wow.
We'll see how that goes.
We're always here for you for the news bombs that you help drop, my friend. So thank you for always being there for us. Thank you for always being there anytime I've ever called and been like, hey, I think this needs some airtime. You're always there. So thank you for that. Take care of yourself and be safe out there in the field, bud.
Will do. I appreciate it. You guys have a good night.
All right.
I'll see you soon.
All right, man. Take care. Mike Turber, everybody. Thank you so much, Mike, as always, for coming on the show. Thank you so much to all of you. Please do stay tuned in after this commercial message. We will be coming back and talking with Nathaniel Gillis about a pretty heavy topic. I mean, we have some light with it, but going into another end of the UFO UAP phenomenon and the fact of alien abduction, alien pregnancy, alien missing pregnancy, people who reported being pregnant and then suddenly their pregnancy has vanished. We'll be getting into the concept of the Multers, and invading group of spirits, not demons necessarily, but disembodied spirits that have carried on throughout humanity by basically assuming the body of another and replacing the interior soul that's there. Are they using our familiarity with topics like aliens, alien abduction, and using that as a bypass to our spiritual consent to allow this to happen? We'll be getting into that topic with demonologist and researcher Nathaniel Gillis right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more, and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com, and the code is CURIOUS7.
Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome back from our commercial break. Thank you so much to all of our sponsors. Thank you so much to all of you for your continued listening and support. Our upcoming guest, his books are available in the Curious Realm store, curiousrealm.com/store. The Skin That Crawls is some great work. Welcome back to the show, Nathaniel Gillis, demonologist. How are you today, my friend?
I am doing well, and I am so glad to be back with one of my favorite people in the field.
Thanks.
And really, and guys, he paid me $20 to stop skipping.
$20 a month. Let's be real. Don't
yeah,
skip it.
It's a subscription
service. That's not bad, actually. I think we could really sell a self-aggrandizement service.
There we go. People would
aggrandizement.com.
But it's so good to be back with you guys. And I don't know how long it's been, but each and every time we've been together, we went down some really good trails in the research, and I'm just really happy to be back with you guys.
Hey, thank you so much, man. It is always a pleasure having you on. Like I was just saying in our pre-conversation, some of your research popped up a few times for me this mm-hmm. last year, just in mind while I was out working and doing other conferences, attending conferences that I was recording at. And for those of you that are not familiar with Nathaniel Gillis and his demonologic work, it follows a very specific route with a group called the Molters. Before we get into some of the modern topics that we were talking about in our pre-conversation, Nathaniel, let's kind of
familiarize some of our new listeners with the concept of the Multers, what they are, and how they have been moving throughout history, this group of basically soul-stalking demons that are out there?
Absolutely. Well, they're super predators, very much so. They have the psychopathy and psychology of what we would consider to be a serial killer. They have their own victimologies, their own sexual pathology. And essentially what they were is a species, and at this point I believe they're formerly human. That's my theory. But they were a species that in order to survive this realm, they needed to have a body to possess. And so what they were doing is transferring their consciousness by virtue of possession to many, to different people, up until they wanted a body for themselves. And so then they started to inseminate women, create a fetus, and then take the fetus out of the woman at maybe 4 or 5 months, and then place their own consciousness in that fetus. So that's what the behavioral patterns speak of throughout history, biblical antiquity, Mesopotamia. And I really believe, again, that we're witnessing right now, we're witnessing it in the Missy fetus syndrome in the UFO abduction phenomenon. And so these are beings, and they can self-replicate through us. And it's just a dangerous game that we're playing with them.
It really is. And we, numerous times on this show, have gotten very spiritual, especially with Reverend James Cloud, Archbishop James Cloud, we here recently with Wallace, same thing. The idea that a spirituality is necessary when researching things like the paranormal, that kind of stuff. I think it's necessary to at least have a type of spiritual grounding. I'm not saying religious studies. You don't need to be going to, you know, Bible study every Wednesday night. However, to believe in something greater than yourself, to believe in something larger than your local reality, I think is hugely important, not only to keep an open mind, but to keep yourself protected and to keep yourself grounded when it comes to dealing with things. Because often, much like the conversation that we had last week, about communicating with spirits, it's our intent that is put out and broadcast. And that is where your research, especially when it comes to missing fetus syndrome, alien abduction, things like that, that is where this becomes a crossroads, Nathaniel, that I think is hugely important. Because I truly believe the fact that, yes, there is something else there, that absolutely there are alien abductions, much like there are alien craft in our skies. I have no doubt about it. However, I think that the greater majority of the sightings that we have, the sightings that are reported, the evidence that we have before us are fully explainable technology that we are just unaware of. And much like with alien abduction, yes, there are a minority of cases that are. I think that many others, as we were discussing a while ago, are much more akin to out-of-body experience that people have misinterpreted, or even the abduction under false pretense. Ooh, hypothesis. Yes. And yeah, the idea that another entity like the Multers is literally hijacking our psyche and what we would accept, what we would welcome as an experience.
Yes, sir.
An open door for a vampire, basically.
Absolutely. Excuse me. And yeah, you're exactly right. And you're touching on an aspect of this research that is deeply troubling, because it's almost as if that they're manipulating the human condition. And we've spoke about this. If we didn't speak about it last time, just look at other shows I've done where, you know, there is a temptation of belief occurring. And I can go through many, many case studies of people, even when they call on Jesus during the event. There was one that told me Jesus manifested, but he wasn't the Jewish rabbi from the first century, right?
Yeah.
He was a Swedish Presbyterian. it wasn't even the real Jesus.
Well, granted, his name was Jesus. However,
there we go. Yeah, right. There we go. But it was so interesting to me because it was like, okay, and the phenomenon again was playing into a role,
yeah,
and working her like a safe, you know, like a little dial, you know, spinning the dial, trying to figure out how I can gain access and consent. And it's really terrifying because we really don't know the ins and outs of what they're doing and why they're doing it. And we're not the superior species. Let me put it that way. It doesn't seem like that.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, even if you track back to ancient Israel, things like that, to akin this to world religion. I mean, the concept of the Nephilim and the fallen angels. I mean, that is exactly what led to the flood biblically,
right?
was the crossbreeding between the Nephilim and the daughters of men.
Yes, sir.
And well, I guess the creation of the Nephilim from the fallen and the daughters of men. But to think that some of them survived, that perhaps even the races of giants that have been around and talked about for thousands of years might be in some way related. But to think about a race of beings that much in the same way has perpetuated themselves through skinning themselves in humanity, that is a truly frightening concept.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And when we start to highlight the many nuances of the Nephilim, they are molters, but more than anything else, this is something perhaps we've never discussed, they perform necrophilia.
Mm.
The Bible says that they went into strange flesh. Think about that. What's strange about flesh? No, it's not just flesh, but it's strange. Matter of fact, the book of Job, chapter 15, he talks about this and he mentions them and he says that, can a giant be born from the dead?
Interesting.
He's talking about the Rephaim, right? And how that these are merchants of death. And this fits right into what we're talking about and how they can pull souls out of bodies. You know, they do have access to the afterlife. And so they have head knowledge that we don't. And so, you know, the real question is, all right, are they existing in the afterlife? Right? Because the hypothesis in the book of Genesis chapter 6 was that these were not just men of renown. These were former men of renown. And now that they were disembodied. Okay, that's what's so fascinating. That's why when you get into Hebrew, Rephaim has a dual meaning. One meaning is phantoms. Literally, ghosts.
Mm.
The other meaning is a giant. Now, what we're witnessing here in the linguistics, it's very interesting. It's not either or. It's not a giant or a ghost. It's a ghost inside the body of a giant.
Yeah.
So you literally, these are the molters, right? That's their pathology.
Well, can you birth a giant from the dead?
Exactly right. That's what Job was saying. Incredible, incredible implication.
Yeah.
For who these beings are and where they originated. So if in fact these are Nephilim, this is something that most evangelical researchers that I know, you know, it's like they fumble the bag, at least. That's the 21st century. It's my generation's phrase for, you know, they kind of screw up because they get really far in their research without realizing, hey, wait a second. These were actually formerly human beings. They were human beings that were disembodied. And anyways, but yeah, so they're molters. But necrophilia was something that they used to replicate themselves in this world. It's not unlike what these Israeli scientists are learning and how if they can catch a man who's recently deceased,
yep,
they can do, and I'm not... They can do what Father Sinistro of Amino said. They would milk the carcasses of the dead for all of their secretions and use that as a portal to step into our world, which, and I don't want to ramble. Tell me if I'm rambling. I'll stop. But we've seen that nuance throughout all of history with the vampires. right? At first blush, we all thought, okay, the vampires were just sucking blood. I think, no, they were taking excretions from the body. And in doing so, the reason they were doing that was because they wanted to create a new body for themselves, which is, it's pretty terrifying. But you have the article right up there. It's another one. Like, what's really going on here?
Yeah. Yeah. And we have successfully revived pig tissue, pig brains. We've like that's here in the last year that they have announced that that was successful. They have been able to bring pigs back from the dead. But when you're talking about something embodying that dead corpse, there is a big distinction, especially when it comes to the Old Testament.
Right.
The warning of necromancy.
Mm-hmm.
The warning against communicating or communing with the dead. And there's a distinction there made.
Correct.
Even at that point, between communicating with the dead and communing with the dead.
100%.
And I think it's a really interesting distinction to see, because when you go back and look at a lot of the Jewish law, things like that, a lot of them, there's a lot of them that go really deep, like wash your hands this way before coming into worship at 2 p.m. Wash them a different way when you come in the evening, things like that. But a lot of them were based on very common sense stuff. You know, like, hey, don't eat shellfish. Really good advice when you live in the desert. yeah. Doesn't matter if you come across some ocean, you may want to leave the shellfish alone. You know, don't eat pork. Funny. It goes bad really fast. Beef cures better, you know.
Yep.
A lot of really common sense rules. But when you're talking about even sorcery, you know, Archbishop James Cloud on the show who made the distinction that, yeah, you know, using mind altering drugs, things like that, form of sorcery. So even that, a common sense warning. But when you're talking about, we're going to warn you against necromancy and communing with the dead. Yeah, like, They were viably concerned about reincarnation, especially within familial lines. That is where the whole concept of sins of the fathers came from.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of you could be born into sin. It's really interesting concepts that go on there. And when you start talking about the guilt complex and the idea of belonging to something.
Mm-hmm.
Even when organized religions, you're once again broadcasting something out there. And just to akin this to not only our conversation previously, but to what's going on currently in the UFO UAP communities. You know, we as a humanity right now are on this cusp, Nathaniel, of acceptance, non-acceptance, not just of a belief, but of each other for a belief.
Ooh, yeah.
And
exactly right.
And I think that's a dangerous cusp in a lot of ways. Allows us to point a lot of fingers without a lot of evidence, with nothing but mm-hmm. spectral evidence, because we believe something different. However, it also sets us up for a whole land of confusion, quite literally, that I think obscures the boundaries of spiritual permission, that spiritual consent that exists. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about something like, now granted, a true alien abduction, probably not a lot of consent involved. You know,
that is for sure. That is 100% true.
Nobody that I've talked to was it like, hey, you want to come along? And they were like, yeah, totally. However, when you're talking about a lot of people's experiences where things take on this alien context, and it might be something that their brain waves would accept, as opposed to, hey, here's a scary, freaky thing that wants to come impregnate you and then take the fetus and absorb itself into said fetus to continue life. Yeah, probably not as like, hey, how you doing of an experience.
Yeah, that's not a very comfortable position to be in.
Yeah.
I had a lady comment on one of my shows a while ago. She goes, well, she goes, I allow them to abduct me, so I give them consent, and therefore they're good beings. I said, well, that's kind of like saying a robber will, you know, he'll go through an unlocked door. Doesn't mean he won't bust the door down if it was locked. They can, you know. So we're still trying to figure out what rules they're playing.
Yeah, the guy I let in only eats sandwiches. He doesn't steal anything.
Exactly right. Great point.
But what about his buddy that does steal stuff? Well, I don't know if he comes in or not.
Yeah, and you know, it's so funny. It's kind of what I love how you couched that, because it really, really is true.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people, I say, okay, you know, I believe that the phenomenon is largely love and light, and there are only certain aspects of it that's really dark. I said, but okay, let's put it like this. You know, Jerry across the street, sometimes he'll cut our grass when we're on vacation. He'll have us over for a cookout, you know, but sometimes he'll take my wife out of her own body. Right. I mean, let's put it that way. Like sometimes he'll take a soul every now and then and kidnap members of my family. But other than that, he's a really good guy. But well, what I'm really pointing out here is, look, what they're doing, even if it's some of it is love and light, it's the width and breadth, rather, of the darker scenarios we're seeing play out. These are dark enough to contextualize the rest of the phenomenon in such a way where it's like, okay, yeah, sometimes they heal. But also, sometimes people have been known to just literally been peeled out of their own bodies without their permission, in many cases, without their own knowledge. Like,
yeah,
that's a big deal, you know, and I think that the danger they represent, I think, kind of overshadows even the highlighted good, sometimes good events that take place. Like I said, sure, the guy across the street will cook us a hamburger every now and then.
It's the ritual sacrifice you need to focus on, though.
Yeah, yeah. And what we're being made to do, though, in the field is kind of ignore that and say, you know, who cares? The cheeseburger's really juicy.
Well, and you know, that is something that we really, really have to consider, man. And as number one, even as a broadcaster talking about these things, I have a responsibility. I have an accountability, not only to the truth and what's out there, but to exploration of topics, and unabashed exploration. At the same time, I have a responsibility that is incumbent upon me to vet as much as I can, to explicate as much as I can in the bounds in which we're explicating it. Prime example, many in my audience know, I am a former employee of InfoWars. I was an on-air producer for Alex. And it's not necessarily what he said that causes the issue. It's the actions of the millions of listeners who followed the Pied Piper. And when he said, hey, I'm not saying this, go out and explore for yourself. Contact these people. Ask them yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it became a problem.
Right.
And it becomes a problem when you continue feeding the delusion to the delusional. When you have admitted and you have yielded the fact that a lot of what you are talking about, and that your guest is talking about even, is a hypothesis or delusion, you can't sell it as anything else. Even right now, with the situation in the UFO UAP community of Corey Good, the man behind Cosmic Disclosure, all of that, the whole idea of the secret space program and being gone for 20 years at a time, then age regressed when you come back, and contacting blue avians who are trying to help humanity, ends up all of that is his. It's his intellectual property. The Blue Avians are his personal meditation guides that he came up with, like my meditation guide that I go meet to, like, mm-hmm. travel and find information in my dreams, things like that. Now, that is not what the story of Cosmic Disclosure sold. That is not what Corey Good said in numerous interviews, never once until these lawsuits and his deposition that we talked about a month or so ago. Never once has he ever come out publicly and said, hey, all of this is channeled information. This is all intellectual property. This is all based on an event that happened to me that I was younger that I have extrapolated on top of. Instead,
that's L. Ron Hubbard-esque right there. L. Ron Hubbard-esque.
Yeah. And quite literally in his deposition calls the people who have also said that they are in the secret space program or have been members of it or have talked to the Blue Avians. All of that calls them delusional. And once again, at what point are you responsible for continuing to spoon feed the delusion to the delusional?
Correct. And he was in on it too. So well, he's kind of
you're in on making the money. You're in on everything. And the real issue comes to bear. You have now. This is the loop back, folks. This is the circle part of the conversation where I bring it back. You might be like, why the hell did he go off on this check? You have now set forth in these people's minds a gateway of acceptance. You have now set a new boundary that they are willing to accept in their psyche that another entity can fully use and exploit.
100%. And because, we've seen that over,
because
over
you,
again.
You have made this an acceptable truth for them. And because you've made it an acceptable truth, you now have allowed other thought forms to infiltrate.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've created a predictable manifestation into which any entity, any kind of entity, any species of spirit can just step into that role and work that. It's almost like a religious system and work that religious yeah. system like a deity. And which when we're getting into just the way that these beings are grooming certain experiencers, there is a control mechanism involved.
The grooming is a beautiful, beautiful language there, man. As a show that talks a lot about human trafficking mm-hmm. and things like that, the idea that you are being groomed by these entities.
100%.
Yeah.
And I know how dark that sounds.
But explore that for a second, because I think it's really important. A, most people do not understand the concept of grooming to begin with and this slow and steady process of desensitization that you can right. do to somebody to bend them to will without their knowledge. Like it basically becomes like a Stockholm syndrome where you identify more with your captor or persecutor.
100%. And I've had discussions with experiencers who suffer from that. Yeah, I mean, they can either say, okay, I went through something incredibly traumatic that was both spiritual and physical and gave me PTSD. Or I could simply say, okay, they weren't really that bad. And it was actually a good experience. And there's even researchers in the States now that are looking at these case studies of women being assaulted and threatened on ships by these beings and coming back around like Hannibal Lecter and saying, well, it really wasn't all that bad. You misinterpreted it. No, it's not. You know, we're not misinterpreting it. You know, some of these beings are really, really, really evil. But with the aspect of grooming, this gets back to the CE5 protocols, and I won't go down that rabbit hole. But grooming,
no. Yeah. Let's explore the rabbit hole, because I think it's an important one. I've been wanting to have somebody on about CE5. I am all about the concept, and I'll preface your comments here with the comments that I was making earlier and about the idea of these beings. Be they extraterrestrial craft or extraterrestrials in craft or these other beings that you're speaking of exist not necessarily on a different plane of reality, but in a different vibrational state.
Right.
So
right.
That explains why not everybody is necessarily able to see a craft, even though they're in the same location. a lot of things.
That's true. That's true.
The case that rings to mind always is the one that Kathleen Martin spoke about on the show, where a person who had never experienced or was never open to this kind of thing had a UFO UAP experience, and when they went to touch the craft, passed through the skin of the object. Now, this same experience was echoed in a speech by Hal Puthoff that I witnessed at the International Remote Viewing Association conference in Menlo Park, California. He has read on to the UFO UAP topic. He sits on many panels, can't talk about a lot of things, but he referenced this same thing. And the idea of, through meditative practice, through the same way that these remote viewers are able to tune into something halfway across the globe, because we're sharing an electron shell right now, Nathaniel, by all means of physics. So that non-locality is totally a real thing. Because of that, because of the manipulation, the reality of this person being able to pass through an object like the Flash does in DC Comics, where it's like, oh, let me touch the wall and I'll feel the vibration of the atoms and I'll match it with my speed and vibrate my atoms and then I'll pass through it. So same thing through CE5, these people, through meditation, through our want of paranormal experience, we are shifting our reality and our vibration to be acceptable.
Correct. And I, like we were talking about before the show, I think that's going to be the next dimension of research for the next 50 years is how, you know, what is occurring? How can we cause that to occur? And even more, like, what are these ships made out of, right? I mean, sure, we do have the nuts and bolts aspect of it, but there's something deeply, and I'm going to use this word loosely, not in the sense of the religious context, but we are dealing with something that could be perceived as spiritual.
Oh, it is perceived as spiritual, no doubt. Period.
Yeah, and so with CE5, I think that is the 21st century's attempt at classifying spirits. It's the same thing that we've done in demonology, especially with Crowley and all of your magi out there. You know, okay, this is how I approach this entity. This is what this entity likes. This is the sacrifice this entity requires. Now what we're having now is in the field is essentially the same thing in the sense that, you know, we have people going out there performing rituals, performing prayers, building altars to these beings, which, again, it's nerve-wracking for me because I know in my own case studies that many times we can open up a door for something we didn't even know existed, and now it's in our world, it's attached to us, and we have to answer to it. We have to do something that it wants us to do. And so I told people in my project the other day, you know, I err on the side of caution here because we really don't know who, what, where, and when they are.
Yeah.
That's the terrifying aspect.
Well, and like we've said numerous times on the show with you, they're playing by a different set of rules. The only rules for interaction with spirits that exist are quite literally the rules that we have made.
There we go.
That's it. Feel free to check any. There's one biblical reference to the interaction of a spirit with mankind, and that's Job. There are some rules were laid down. Don't kill him.
Right. There's a boundary.
It started with you can't physically hurt him. And then it became, well, you know, if you let me physically hurt him, I might be able to change his mind. All right, but you can't kill him. That's apparently the only rule that they are playing by, is you can't kill them. Because it's no longer, the rule of you can't hurt him was bypassed with you can't kill him. So that's literally the only rule that they're playing by in their playbook is, well, can't kill the host. All right, noted.
Noted. Everything else is on the table, though, right?
Yeah,
that's really not cool.
Yeah. But it's an important thing to realize, because once again,
in these communities that we are both involved in, Nathaniel, be it the paranormal community, the UFO, UAP community, I'm a believer of believers. However, I am an evidence-based person, and I want evidence for all of it. Not that I don't believe, not that I'm, you know, don't believe in existence. However, we have to be careful. We have to guard ourselves with what we accept.
Right.
Because ask anybody, you accept everything and you'll accept nothing. You'll fall for everything. And it's the exact opposite as well. If you accept everything, what are you going to believe in now? Where is the line?
It's a great point. And so there has to be a vetting system. And I think, you know, the field's pretty young in this, honestly. You know, I don't think, okay, it's like, okay, I conjured them and then they're exactly who I wanted them to be. It's a little darker than that. And it's kind of interesting to me because it's like when you get back into Ted Rice's research, he was a medium, psychic medium that was working with Dr. Carla Turner. He had his guides. He thought he had a guides that he had been working with for like 30 years of like counseling and attachment therapy.
Sure.
Up until he was abducted by them. Then they wanted to sleep with his grandmother on the ship. And she said, look, I've only been with one man. That's my husband. He's been dead for like 11 years. They manifested the apparition of her deceased husband. But it took him almost 30 years of them infiltrating his consciousness and him being a vessel for their knowledge to pass through. Almost a 30-year period of that. And then one abduction event, he realizes, I've been lied to the whole time. These are who my guides are, and they're not good beings.
Yeah, they were grooming you for that specific horrifying moment.
Right, and this grooming aspect cannot be ignored. I mean, one question that's pretty profound that I asked on the Leap Project, they asked, okay, well, we're dealing with CE5. Who is conjuring who here, and how do we know they didn't put that thought in our mind for us to open a portal for them? Not unlike, now, all right, I don't want to rant, but not unlike the case of possession that I had, where the 13-year-old girl was got really close to a 50-year-old girl from school, and they both planned to kill a family together. And so it was the 12-year-old's family. And so one night, the 12-year-old walks downstairs, opens up the door. The 15-year-old comes in and stabs, and she actually killed the mother. But my point here, guys, is that entity was grooming both of them because it could not open its own door. It had to have consent.
Yep.
And so now, right, so now the 12-year-old opened the door so the other person could come in. And she was possessed. She had a male guttural voice coming out of her without even talking, the guy said. It was just coming out, talking to them. It was using her as an amplification device.
Yeah, as a conduit.
But you know, these beings do groom people. And they play the long game. It can take 30 years up until that person realizes, oh my God, everything I've been told by them has been all done to get me to this point.
Mm.
And it's really, really scary stuff. Well, I mean, we cannot underestimate them.
Even, and I'll use the word adept when speaking of Aleister Crowley, because despite anything you may think of his work, folks, when it came to his work and what he was doing, he was an adept. Absolutely, hands down, no doubt about it. Not only did he have the training in the tradition of Golden Dawn, things like that, and the concepts of high magic, but to the point that he had his own system that he had adopted. And even somebody who was as adept, and right over my shoulder, there's quite a few works by Aleister Crowley in my esoteric library. And even in his works, nowhere does he say, A, Lamb was exclusive to him.
Yep.
That was his meditative guide, was Lamb. That was the spirit that he talked to regularly. He didn't pull a Corey Good. He wasn't saying that, like, no, you're saying you talk to him, you're crazy pants.
No, and yeah, he was not exclusive. They weren't in some kind of brotherhood relationship.
Well, and even then, even after years of working with Lamb and talking with Lamb and you know, transmitting across the universe with Lamb, never did he say that he fully trusted him.
Exactly. Exactly right. He knew, at least to a certain degree,
that Lamb would be fully able and willing to deceive him at a moment's notice.
100%. Absolutely.
With or without a circle of protection, what have you.
Yeah, and it's so interesting, too. This gets really deep, and I know your audience is going to love this.
No, deep.
Diana Walsh-Pasulka, she made a statement. It was just a fleeting statement that I called, and I called enough of it to be like, oh, my God. She said that there is a measure of the phenomenon that will test people, test their ability to perceive it, even to the point that she said that the researchers, like Putoff, Sidney Vann, all these other people, they're starting to hypothesize that the abduction experiences, even witnessing a UFO, they are all initiatory practices into magical, magical conjurings. In other words, they're testing us. And that if they manifest to us, it's almost like she said that they were almost like recruiting.
Like a
experiencers. Yeah.
Like an acceptance into a mystery school. And
that's exactly right.
You know, that is really fascinating and interesting to hear, because once again, Kathleen Martin, who's been a guest on this show, she's an amazing woman. I need to have her on to talk about this again. She's the niece of Betty and Barney Hill. MUFON field investigator, one of the heads and progenitors of the experiencer resource team that exists with MUFON, going out and talking to experiencers in the field and helping them through the traumatic experience that it frequently is. But a lot of her work, going from field work now, has gone into the spiritual realm. And gone into helping people spiritually connect with the experience that they have had. And one of the things that she said was that more and more people are starting to come back from their first contact experience, from their second contact experience, with not only a deeper spiritual understanding, but almost a set of abilities. Being like an emotional conduit or ESP type abilities, even healing abilities. So interesting that you're bringing up this other person who mentioned that it was almost like an introduction to a mystery school, the experience of abduction.
Correct.
And if you could accept it, that it would be a step to something else.
Right. But see, what I think as well, when we're talking about this, if you look at Crowley, he was at a mystery school. If you look at Parsons, he was at a mystery school. So there were people, there were practitioners in the midst of mystery schools who were conjuring these beings.
Absolutely.
Now here's what's interesting. I mean, it's not just that aspect of it about, okay, you know, they used ritualistic magic to connect with them. But the real question I'm asking is why? How would that even work, right? If these are extraterrestrials, you would think that there would be no invocation involved, right? It wouldn't be like, okay, I'm looking for, like, literally, Crowley was going to do a human sacrifice because he believed that's what they wanted. He didn't do it, but I think, you know, he believed that's what they wanted. Again, why? I mean, if these are even more than that, these weren't even just rituals. It wasn't just ritual magic, but they were bastardized rituals that he took from a Brahmin the mage, who was a mystic and a Kabbalistic practitioner. So if these rites weren't even real in the sense of the word, in the sense of, okay, this is how they're supposed to be, right? Because he had no fear of God. He hated religion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And these rituals were designed for those who had the fear of God. Matter of fact, Abramelin the Mage in his book talks about that explicitly.
When you go into Solomnic magic, when you start getting into the Key of Solomon, which is exactly what Golden Dawn is based off of, everything else, be ready to know your angels and archangels. They all control powers of the universe. They all control planets. They're all tied to times of the day. The word of God, the name of God, is used regularly. Not so in Crowleyan magic.
Correct.
Even though the ritual is the same, a lot of that has been subtracted from.
Correct. Which would leave me the question, okay, these rituals aren't even supposed to work. Think about that.
Or at least not in the way that they were traditionally intended to work.
Exactly right. I mean, it's like taking an engine out of a car and something else propels it. So, you know, it's like I tell people when I do certain lectures, one of my favorite things to do is open up the lecture with this. Okay, open lecture with this. The last man on earth was alone in his house, and there came a knock on the door, because that's what's happening here.
Mm.
Right? With Crowley and how he bastardized them, taking the very engine out of his rituals, taking the base nature of how they're founded, how they work from the rituals themselves, and then something else comes through. Again, what are we really dealing with here? Because it's almost like these beings were waiting for an invitation. It's mind-boggling to me, but that's my question to the field is, okay, what kind of an extraterrestrial would require rituals like these to manifest? You know what I mean? Doesn't really fit to me.
Well, you know, when you get down to it, and when you start talking about abduction experience, it's not every person that has the violent invasive experience. Now, granted, most people have a fearful experience, you know, like, hey, go back and read ancient texts. There were very few people who met an angel who weren't scared as hell when they first saw the angel, despite the fact that they looked like a human being. They for some reason were like, ready to run out of their own skin at the sight of this thing. Even though it looked like the guy next door, you know, there was something about it that's different. And not every experience, even though people are frightened or taken over by that all consuming fear that just freezes you. But not all of them are invasive to the point of I was probed. DNA was taken. I was impregnated. I was taken again later, and my baby was taken from me. Not all of them fit that description. As a matter of fact, probably close to about 10 to 20%.
Correct.
So, you know, when you're talking about the same thing and you know, not every ritual is intended to do the same thing, but if 10 or 20% are.
There we go. Yeah, it's very strange. I mean, if we get even to the UFO abduction phenomenon, I mean, it's again, you know, it's not just, okay, the impregnation or the harvesting of semen and ova. It's really weird. I mean, we have case studies where it seems that these beings are mentoring consciousness, not the body, right? Where they will pluck the soul. Let's just go with that for a second. I know it's not a very good working vocabulary yet, because we have yet to find good vocabulary for what's happening. But, yeah, they'll take the soul out of the body like they did Betty Luca. And they'll train Betty. They'll train the soul how to fly the craft. Now, they're not training for muscle memory because they abducted her out of her body. So is that why that people like Bledsoe and other experiencers say that when I got onto the ship, there was a soul in it? Right? Look at the implications for us as a species. Are they grooming experiencers, not for life, but for the afterlife?
Yeah.
You know, because it's like Whitley Strieber. Whitley Strieber's abducted, and with the beings was a deceased friend of his. Just with them, hanging out.
Yeah.
You know, so and I did a lecture not too long ago about how that they can mimic the deceased. That is dark enough, but let's go with this for a second. What if they are harvesting souls, and that what they're doing now is they're trying to train us while we're in the body so that when we're out of it after death,
we're comfortable.
We can catch it, right? We're, yeah, we have training. We know what we're supposed to do, and we're... And I hate to say it like this, but this is what's going on. We're flying around with them.
Yeah, not that light, this light. Come to
yes,
this one.
Yes. The Art Bell, you know, that Art Bell show? He's like, man, he goes, yeah, he goes, my friend told me, you know, don't go into the light, go into the darkness, it's a trap.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But, don't. When something goes down, I tell my wife all the time, when something goes down, expect me to run toward it.
Right.
I'm not going to be running with the crowd. Let's put it that way. I will either hunker in place or I will actively run toward the action because it will eventually run past me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to run with the rabble. It's not going to happen.
You're like, I'm not a follower. I'm a leader.
Well, yeah. Hey, my odds of survival go up drastically.
Yeah, man. You know, it's really terrifying. I mean, that's what they're doing. I guess you fly a UFO, that'd be pretty funny. Hey, mate.
Hey, hold on. Watch this. But yeah. I mean, we really do have to consider that, especially when we're talking about lifelong experiences, when we're talking about people who have been abducted for years of their life. Once again, like Whitley Strieber, the first time he was abducted, there was a friend of his there. And that familiarity, that setup of familiarity in the situation, right, I think is really interesting with that. Because once again, it sets up for even the subconscious consent to be given.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I'm going to throw this at you, man. You're going to like this. It's. I think it's incredible. And I just read this the other day on Twitter. A pilot had came forward, and he's going to be talking to Corbell and Knapp on their podcast, their new podcast. He's come forward. His experience with a UFO is perhaps one of the most unique that I've heard from these fighter pilots. But he said that he was flying, and he looked out the window, and there was a UFO flying right next to him, keeping the same speed. And he said it was turning, and when it turned to a certain point, and he saw windows. And inside of that ship were two small beings. He didn't call them grays, but he said there were two small beings. And then there were two bigger, like taller beings behind them. He said the smaller beings were flying the craft. He said, that's all well and good. He's like, and I'm sure people are really interested in what the ship looked like. He said, but what I want to share is something happens, what happened to me afterwards. He said, when I landed the plane, he said, I went into, you know, the office, and then went to the bathroom. I shut the door in the bathroom stall, I sat on the toilet and started crying. He said, but during that moment, when I'm in the bathroom, he said, I was leaving my body in and out. He said, I was suffering from bilocation. And he said, at first, he said, I thought I was dying.
Wow.
Now, at what point do we ask the question of whether or not they were wanting to take his soul from his body? Were they trying to, right? And did he escape it? What this makes me think of is it's like the Las Vegas shooting. There was a survivor.
Yep.
With her mother. I'm sorry, she was a mother, but she was with her daughter and her husband. She got shot in the head, and she said, I remember floating over my body. Now, this pilot is experiencing the same phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get shot. He didn't get shot, but it was a near death. And he really did think, I'm going to die.
Well, and once again, as Kathleen Martin said, many, many abduction experiences are now being akin very, very much to OBE, out-of-body experiences. They've got very similar circumstances. and very similar sensations that people are feeling. So it's really interesting to think about that. And whenever you think about what we were just talking about with the whole shift of vibration, if especially if he was in proximity of a craft, things like that, and it was there and he saw it, and with that kind of detail, he would have definitely been vibrated to the point that he was at least exposed to the intense vibration of that craft. And even the fact of his molecules vibrating and coming back to a point of stasis and vibrating and coming back to a point of stasis, that could definitely explain his experience of bilocation and the feeling of being pulled out of his body and back in.
Yeah, it's a very good hypothesis. I think there's a lot to that. But I mean, if that's true, which I believe it is, I mean, that would explain a lot of these abduction accounts. You know, even, I mean, so it's not just okay that they're taking souls and they're moving souls or consciousness through walls. But you're right. I mean, we have cases of actual physical bodies moving through a wall and remembering what the inside of the wall looked like as they went through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is crazy.
Where once again, just to loop this conversation back to earlier, where, you know, you have children that remember past lives within their own family. Heck, we wonder regularly if my son is one of them. Because a lot of the things that he says are things that are similar to my grandfather, his namesake. And there's a lot of things that he says. Like he goes on regularly about when my wife lives in California and we live here.
Wow.
And like as though it is a reality. And it's one of those, like, I don't discourage such things. I more encourage them. Let's explore that. What do you know that I don't, boy? But at the same token, it's one of those, like, to be open to that experience, to be open to that point of vibration, we have to be trained to be open to that point of vibration. And to think that somebody who has been abducted their whole life may be on the radar for such things, even to think of, once again, experiences happening along familial lines. Abductions happening along familial lines. If it's the fact that, hey, these demons have found a bloodline that seems to be susceptible to once again go breed with, take the youngest among them and embody that body.
Right.
If they're already of the bloodline and body type that would accept without rejection, that sure does make it a whole lot easier.
It does. It's something that I have been really thinking about lately is this. You know, I mean, our technology is light years behind theirs. It's seemingly so. But even we can have artificial wombs, right? We can create artificial wombs.
Well, absolutely.
If we can do that, they can. But there seems to be something special about being born through the womb of a woman, right? What is really going on here? Because if we can do it, they can do it. They can easily probably create a body or something to take, you know, to possess. But now we're asking the question of, okay, why does it really matter? Like, is there something that they know about being born of blood and water that we don't? Because they're doing this all the time. They're taking fetuses all of the time. So I don't know. I hope to know in the future, though.
It's definitely, you know, when you're thinking about the idea of birth and what specifically a human birth means, it is different. It is different. Even whenever you go back and spiritually look at the birth of man in most cosmologies, most religious studies, we stand unique amongst creation. In just about every one of those cosmologies, we stand unique. The one that most people would be familiar with would be the Book of Genesis. Now, granted, two different stories of creation back to back there, but when you go back to the Kabbalistic story of creation, what makes us unique is the fact that amongst all other critters, we were the only ones that were specifically breathed life into by the Creator.
Yes,
which is why we are special, which is why spells exist, why prayers are answered, why we are able to change reality around us with words. Because the universe was spoken into being. Everything was spoken into being. So whatever we say is. And that makes us unique. That makes a, I mean, because, yeah, hey, why wouldn't they just take over pigs, man?
Millions of them.
All over the place. Why wouldn't you just take over pigs and live off them?
Right. Yeah, they could do that. I mean, if like I said, comparing our technology to theirs, we're light years behind them. And they're pretty much transcendent. If we can do it, they can, but they don't want to.
Now, just out of curiosity, because the theologian in me is sparked now with this conversation, and I guess I would have to question the fact of are these soulless spirits? Are they akin to angel? Where once an angel loses grace, you're gone. Sorry, man. There's no redemption. It doesn't happen. You don't have a soul that can be redeemed. You don't have that choice of follow or don't follow. You know?
Well,
you have the choice of serve or don't serve, and if you don't serve, you ain't up here. Go on. The only other rule aside from that is don't kill him.
Right.
which we've already explained.
Yeah. Ruin his credit, but just don't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Destroy the credit, burn his house down, whatever. Just don't kill him.
That would be a really bad position. Like, really, dude? I don't have to die. That's the good thing out of it.
But is it more, because I don't think that it's like an active want of destruction of the soul. It's more a parasitic continuation of their own life cycle is what it seems like. So it's not like they are a possessing demon that wants to come in and corrupt your soul for the reason of defaming God in the classic sense of demoniac possession.
Correct. Their pathology is different, and it does fit the ancient understanding of the unclean spirit, right?
It's absolutely.
Disembodied entity. And the hypothesis that I'm working off of currently, it stems from rituals like the Red Rite. The Red Rite is it's a liturgical ritual, but it's even deeper than that, more physical than that, because what it consisted of was a magician or a sorcerer who, when his body was decaying and he was graying and he's getting old, at a certain point, he would go and inseminate. I mean, this is going to sound like UFO abduction phenomenon. He will inseminate a woman with a fetus and then take that fetus as a new body to inhabit. And the ritual he performed was designed to take his consciousness from one body into another body. And then at that point, the fetus is also taken, right? Because it's him. And he's almost, in a sense, being reborn into this dimension. Now, the purpose of that as well was not just to self-replicate, but it was also that because they believed, these spirits believed, that if they died, really died, without a body died, that there will be a certain time when they're going to be judged. And so they were kind of skipping that system and kind of circumventing it by being reborn and reborn and reborn and reborn again. So that's an interesting hypothesis that's worth considering.
Yeah. Yeah. No, most definitely. And once again, leaning on the idea of reincarnation and a soul being able to embody another body.
Correct.
So, I mean, I think it's really phenomenal to sit back and consider the fact that, once again, they're, again, not even necessarily like you're saying, that these are something that has existed since time immemorial. You know, it's not necessarily that these are demons or anything like that, you know, that fell before the creation of man, but much more likely that they are corrupted spirits of men that found this means of continuance.
Right, right. Self-replication. And this is, see, this is the definition of the dibuk, the impregnation of the dead in the bodies of the living. I really, really believe that is what's occurring in the hybridization program. It's a new term for an ancient phenomenon, and we're trying to reinterpret it into the 21st century. But it's like, okay, I tell people all the time, because I deal with a lot of hybrid mothers too. And, you know, one lady had been taken since she was starting her puberty. When she got into womanhood, they were monitoring her fertility. And next thing you know, boom, she's taken. And we're going to go down this way, this road too, because it's a great question. How do we know, how do you know that the seed that they're inseminating with these women with didn't come from a dead man?
Yeah. Quite literally what I have up on screen right now.
Yes, literally. This is why I believe, I mean, we think a lot alike, man, but we're in the same flow. But so watch this. This is why I believe Job asked the question, can a giant be born from the dead?
Yeah.
Literally, it was almost like a these beings are in some kind of death cult, or using necromancy, necrophilia to perform rituals. And there is an experiencer that watched them. I'm not going to name her, but she watched these beings perform rituals, Christopher. I mean, this would make perfect sense as to why they contact us when we perform rituals, right?
Absolutely.
Which would let's kind of put another nail in the coffin here, which would also add clarity to why they're manifesting to people and conjuring them into initiatory practices, because they are in a mystery school, right? It all fits together. All fits together.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's. Once again, an interesting phenomenology to consider, the idea that, because once again, why else that common sense warning, straight up warning against sorcery, necromancy, and communing with the dead?
Right.
Those three things specifically mentioned, and granted, there's a lot of other things mentioned. I mean, I throw out one of my favorites, Leviticus 18:22. Like Leviticus 18:20, folks, is all like basically rabbinic sexual law. And 18:22 is where, you know, you can't sleep with a man as with a woman, thus is abomination. But if you go into 18:23, hey, you can't sleep with an animal as with a woman. Because it's unnatural. Apparently, there was enough of an issue with bestiality that we had to put it down on paper.
Right.
That ain't what you should be doing, you know? So apparently, there was enough of an issue with sorcery, communing with the dead, and necromancy that they had to specifically mention it by name.
Right, right. There was something to be mentioned, first of all.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because one of the my favorite scholars, her name is Esther Amore. She's from the Union Theological Seminary in New York. She wrote a book on divination. I'm sorry, it's called Women in Divination in Biblical Studies. And she gets down to the brass tacks of the language being employed. And literally, it's not just that you're not supposed to contact the dead. It's almost a reference to these beings. Because watch this. If these beings are deceased, then it's not just, okay, you're not supposed to contact your dear Aunt Edna, but it's literally, here's why. Because you run the risk of running into one of these molters. And, you know, you're going to create a problem for yourself. I mean, but it's really fascinating stuff. But again, it does point to them being a part of a mystery school. Also, you ever heard of the Moffat case, the Deborah Moffat case, Christopher?
No, familiarize us with it.
Okay. Here's why, because this is going to tie into them being in a mystery school and basically being sorcerers. So Deborah Moffat, her mother-in-law was sick, and she lived with her mother-in-law and her father-in-law. And so it's her husband, and then her husband's parents. So they're all under the same roof. Her mother-in-law gets really sick. She almost dies. Well, they had a lady that was coming in to clean the house for them, and they became really close friends through the years. Well, this lady was a practitioner of Santeria, and she performed a Santerian ritual over that woman, the sick woman, the mother-in-law. And in the middle of the ritual, she botched it. She didn't say how she botched it. She said it could have been a mispronounced word or a missing word or something. But she said, I made a mistake in the actual ritual. Next thing they know, there's something writing on the mirror in the bathroom with soap. And this entity was a part of a mystery school. He wanted a blood sacrifice. He told them how to do it. And he said that he had existed hundreds and hundreds of years ago. He lived in a monastery with other practitioners, and that he had made a deal with one of them that there's going to be a girl that's going to come down the bloodline of Deborah Moffat. Now, this is some serious stuff. And he said that this girl she'll have a number on her. She will be born after a certain amount of generations. And when she is born, she belongs to this entity. And he literally apported a ritualistic spear and told them, she belongs to me, her soul is mine. Now, this gets back to the CE5. If these beings are literally waiting for even a botched ritual to come through,
sure,
then how many botched rituals are these people going to be performing? And it's literally blood in the water here.
Well, not even necessarily botched ritual, because, you know, once again, do we know? I mean, at least when you're talking the clavicle or the work of Crowley, what have you, you've got a known quantitative. You've got the experience. You've got. You know, even with Crowley and his demons and spirits that he talked with and about, you have drawings, you know, when you're talking CE5 and when you're talking these contact quote rituals, explain it however you like. When they're, and this is just coming at you from the point of view of a former Catholic seminarian, when you have more than one person gathered in the same place for the same intent, doing the same thing, that is a ritual.
Yep.
All right.
And there's
wherever two or more are present. Let's just put it that way.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, man. Because I've seen people on Twitter, like UFO Twitter, you know, CE5 isn't prayer. Well, okay. 99% of the people that believe that have zero training in theology. Right? They probably don't even believe in religion, but they're going, okay, well, that's not prayer. Well,
it is a form of it is prayer because it is a form of intent. You are putting a defined intent out into the universe. Right. Now, once again, if you're not used to conjuring jinn, if you're not used to dealing with spirits or things of a manifestable and let's just say manipulative nature, go ahead and ask for your pound of gold. See how you get it.
Oh, yeah.
It may just fall out of the sky on your head. But you got your pound of gold. So be careful with what you're manifesting in that group setting. Be careful because all you're putting out is contact.
Right.
You're giving it no definition. You're giving it no, we want to see this, which would almost be even more of a test, Because because at that point, if you're all manifesting the same thing, that'll tell you straight up exactly what's happening, which is pretty much what we're talking about. That experience is being hijacked.
Oh, yeah. And they're baiting us, you know, they're baiting us. And it's like that one girl I was telling you about, or one woman rather, before the show. She had watched my lecture on C5. It was really a primer. But anyway, she said, you know, she goes, I've been a long term practitioner. I love Stephen Greer. She's like, you know, I'm practicing CE5. She said, and
I've got it on my phone.
Yeah. She's like, we had success. And, you know, she says, but one day we did the CE5 experiment in this is crazy. We're playing with fire here. A literal, an apparition that appeared, a full bodied apparition appeared to her out of nowhere. Now, what's really scary is 99% of these cases, these appearance of apparitions, that usually happens in a haunting.
Sure.
So what in the world are we doing now? If it's present with us now, and these beings have also manifested in even the most malevolent hauntings, do we really know who we're dealing with? I mean, it's like Dr. Barry Taft.
Well, and, you know, numerous times, you can go back just about any episode I've ever done on paranormal investigation. Hey, you want to go out, you want to passively gather data, temperatures, EVPs, what have you, go right ahead. I'd never be a part of actively talking or attempting to contact.
Right.
I'm not going to bring a Ouija board to location. I'm not going to bring a medium to location, things like that. I'm not. You are setting up for either a conduit that you don't intend or for somebody's experiential to be your evidence.
Right. And there's going to be a certain point where these beings are no longer satisfied manifesting to them.
Yeah.
Now they want to manifest in them, which this is exactly what Dr. Carla Turner was talking about. In one lecture, you know, like they will commandeer consciousness. And even with the just the material nature of the Ouija board, you pick one up for $20 at a store, it's just a board.
Yeah.
But even Art Bell had an experience with it. I had one guy that told me that he had played with the Ouija board, didn't think anything of it, went to work, came back home from work, and there was an old man sitting on his bedroom, on his bed, his room.
Yeah, you can keep the house, dude.
Yeah,
I gotta go.
Yeah. It was just sitting there. Oh, yeah, I'm out, dude.
I gotta roll.
I would, man. I can't imagine that. That freaked me out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he said his eyes were sunken in, and he was just sitting there on my couch staring at me.
Wow.
So, yeah, even Bosch rituals can introduce a portal. We're playing with fire.
Well, and that's just, once again, though, I wouldn't even say that they're botched. I think that the issue is the issue is the non-issue with people.
Mm-hmm.
And with the disconsideration that what they are doing is a ritual.
Right.
And unfortunately, so the agnostic nature of our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Has brought us to this point. There would have been a point in a time, like, it wasn't too long ago, Nathaniel. It was within our grandparents' lifetime that it was called a parlor, not a living room. It wasn't until the modern funerary movement that it became the living room, because aside from that, the parlor is where you viewed the body. Mm-hmm. We had funerals at home. And when that happened, we put veils over mirrors.
Right.
And reflective surfaces. Things like that. This was not long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Within the last 100 years, this was common funerary practice, even here in America. But yet still in that amount of time, it has become the fact that black mirrors are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We carry them with us. We have them hanging in our bedrooms. We've forgotten the fact that they were once used for scrying and for communicating with the other side. It's now just common practice to have one in your pocket.
Yes, and I don't know, can your audience see you on
yeah.
the show?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I was going to tell you, okay, yeah, for those that can't see him and are listening to this, he's holding his cell phone up.
Yeah. Your television on the wall, unless it's got content right. on it, it's a big old black screen. I have not had a television in my bedroom in 20 years.
Wow. Yep.
My bedroom's for two things. Sleeping is one of them. That's it. That's it. Like, seriously, I won't have one in my bedroom because of things like that. And it's a consideration that we don't really think about, but it's also that lapse of consideration. Because once you know, now you're accountable. And you have to be careful. You really do. And we as a society have become hugely lax in these things. We become hugely lax in accepting the fact that there is something stalking for us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Believe it or not, but the existence of true evil is a real thing. You take it outside of a church if you want. Doesn't bother me a bit. Mm-hmm. But to accept that there isn't an evil in the world that people ascribe or surrender themselves to when they start doing things, I don't know. Maybe it's the fact that I myself have suffered demoniac obsession, Nathaniel. I at one point surrendered my will to a drug that made me do things that were not me. I surrendered my will willingly to that. Took me a long time to get it back. Back full on now. But because of that, I have to be careful. I have to be careful what I surrender myself to. I have to be careful what I expose myself to. No different than when I left the seminary.
Right.
Because I was a raw spiritual nerve. And because of that, I could be easily taken by the other side, easily convinced or coaxed by the other side, all kinds of things, you know. But you have to be on spiritual guard, and you have to be willing to accept the fact that you have to be on spiritual guard.
Whether 100%.
I mean, you don't have to accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior for that to be the case. Just so you know, folks.
Yeah, and it's... You're making a very valid point here, because it's the Bible does say to test the spirits, and
plural.
If we're just out there, just I don't know, doing whatever we want to do, and everything that comes through is good and everything's great. No, I mean, like I said before, there are beings that are waiting for initiatory practices to occur, and this gets back to, okay, who's conjuring who. I show up at a location that's haunted, and I try to conjure an entity. How do I know that entity isn't the one that planted that thought to go there in my own mind? Right? So, but yeah, that's where the research is leading me, is to understand more about this and hopefully gain insight to help others.
Absolutely. And I think unabridged conversations like this are what's really necessary on all sides of the table. Because once again, to blindly follow, which that was the whole reasoning behind me doing the Corey Good episode, Nathaniel, that I did, was because I worked with Alex Jones. I saw the Pied Piper in action. I saw the way you can get caught up in your own cult of personality and make it, because I've had numerous. We haven't really called them anything with Curious Realm, but with Dudes and Beer, they were called Dudes and Beer Called It Moments, where we would discuss something with a guest, and then two or three weeks later, it would drop in the news.
Wow.
And it'd be like, oh, Dudes and Beer called it again. And it can be hard not to build the tower upon that, to shout things from the mountaintop on. The problem is, when one of those things crumbles, so does your whole tower. So you've got to be humble, and you've got to let things that happen. But at the same token, you've got to not lead people to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm. You can't lead them there. All you can do is provide the information. That's it. Once you're leading somebody there, now you are creating a paradigm. You're mm-hmm. you're creating a construct in which you're allowing them to live. And when you rip that construct down, you can destroy people. You can destroy communities. Much like we're seeing with Corey Good right now, where, yeah, what about all those people that accepted what he said and accepted that as a paradigm in their life? Now they're going to psychologically have to deal with that being pulled away.
Yeah, and it's like a cult leader, you know?
Kind
everything
of.
I was doing, it's just, you know, like...
it's a fine line, and it's hard. It's yeah. hard not to cross over to that line, and it's hard. It's hard to maintain belief in something greater than, something bigger than you. Mm-hmm. And once again, we as a these are just two prime examples of glaringly what is happening in our society, and how people are rigidly, stuck in their belief system mm-hmm. to the point that they will defend it to that point, you know? And when you're stuck in that, it can lead to a lot of bad things. It can lead to a lot of bad activities, and it can definitely lead to being blinded to what can be right in front of you. Like, once again, is the experience you're having really the experience you're having, or have you mm-hmm. set up for the consent of another experience?
Oh yeah, that's exactly right, man. You're 100% you're correct. But yeah, you put my books up here. So I have Skin That Crawls, A Moment Called Man. A Moment Called Man is it was an homage to a good friend of mine that died. He overdosed, and I didn't even know he had a problem, Christopher. I found out one day on Facebook that he had passed, but we were really good friends. And I wrote that in his honor, but it is also kind of an homage to the religious system that I grew up and grew out of. You know, because I'm always saying this, guys, because you put the books on screen, so I just want to give some context. And then The Skin That Crawls is literally, it's really dark stuff.
There's none of this, despite us making light of it, that's light material, Nathaniel.
I know, man.
It's all dark stuff.
It's taxing sometimes, you know. I mean, I've had people, you know, how are you doing? How are you staying safe talking about this subject so often and so deeply? But The Skin That Crawls, it goes through the behavioral patterns of these beings I call vultures. And I start out in the Apocrypha of John in Genesis 6. And then I kind of restructure demonic possession and kind of shed light on it in a way that I think would be really beneficial for the field. So hopefully, though, here's my next move. I would love to make The Skin That Crawls into an actual movie, right? A theatrical production.
Okay.
To where I can tell the story on the big screen in a way that it'll entertain them, but it'll also educate them as to what's really going on in the phenomenon.
Yeah, and I think that's important, because once again, to try and explain this is hard if you don't have, and I think we've done a good job of covering the breadth of it to begin with, mm-hmm. because it is it's a thick and meaty topic that touches in a lot of places that you really do have to be familiar with, from demonology and the understanding of that hierarchy religiously mm-hmm. and spiritually to ritualistic magic, all kinds of things that you definitely have to have a full-on understanding of and their relation to each other to see how this phenomenology plays itself out.
Right. You have to bridge the gaps of interconnectivity. And it takes a width and breadth of knowledge that, you know, you got to put in the work.
Well, and that's just it. You have put in literally years of research into this topic, man. And the work that you have done Even the videos that I see you continually putting out, the episodes that you go on, the conversations that you have, I think is really opening up. The stuff that you did with Forbidden Knowledge was fantastic.
Wow, thank you.
And even to hear them having you on to discuss this, you know, because he's up there with Ancient Aliens and things like that. So for him to even be entertaining this conversation with his network, amazing and very responsible, I think, on his side. I think it behooves all of us in the research community when it comes to UFOs, UAPs, abductions, and experiences to consider this as an option. And to consider this not necessarily as an option, but as an eventuality.
There we go. Right. And you're right. And I'm really humbled and honored that there are people that are considering this research. And yeah. There are more people. You know, I told you before, I was with Paul St. Clair.
Yep.
And, you know, we were just going through some of the research, and it was new. It's new to his audience. It was new to much of even his part of the world, you know? So it's getting out more and more. And I've accomplished this all in 3 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So I'm looking forward to the future and seeing what other opportunities present themselves.
Well, I think that the opportunities will do nothing but present themselves to, once again, have seen you grow to this point over the last few years, to the conversations that you are having, the shows that you are guesting on. But kudos to you, man. I think that your research really, really needs a good, hard, heavy look by quite a few in a couple of fields. It's really intelligently put together and ties a long narrative of these not only experiences but entities like this throughout humanity together.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate it, brother.
Absolutely.
Really,
well, of course, time for shameless self-promotion at the end. Do you have any upcoming conferences, any upcoming speaking engagements, other shows? New book releases?
I'm okay. So I just booked a show with Michelle DeRoche. This Thursday I'll be on, and then I have a Rex's show every Thursday. I'm sorry, the first and last Thursdays of the month. I should be doing Rex's show. I still got to talk to him because I double booked, so I'm gonna have to like record that show with Rex like earlier in the day and then do Michelle's at night. So I don't know how I'm going to do that. I talk so fast sometimes. I don't know how I'm going to do that, but I'm going to pull it through. So I'm going to be with her. There's a couple other lectures that I'm going to be giving. And if anybody wants to know where I'm going to be, just follow.
Uh-oh. Hold on, we're losing you, Nathaniel.
That's where I'm at.
Please repeat that. If anybody wants to follow you, what?
If anybody wants to follow me, just look up my YouTube channel, look at my my social media, like I'm on Facebook and Instagram, and I'll be posting all of my lectures and my future appearances there for everybody to check out.
Awesome. Man, thank you so much for the time. Always a great conversation. I love our conversations. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. While you are online checking out all the amazing work of Nathaniel Gillis, you can buy his books at Amazon. You, of course, can also find his books right here in the Curious Realm store. CuriousRealm.com/store is where you can go to find all the books from our guests that appear here on the show. We just had that store rebuilt. All you do is click the image and it'll take you right to the Amazon purchase of everything. So stop on by, check that out, folks. While you're online doing that, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com/story. That is our experiencer page. That's where you can share your experience of the paranormal, cryptids, UFOs, UAPs. If you are a government witness or whistleblower, Feel free to stop on by, give us your story, share your pictures. We will share your experience with our professionals and researchers when they are on the show, and hopefully be able to crack your case a little bit more for you. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.